Getting set for another week here on One Bills Live. John Murphy here. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, will join us in studio. Our man Steve Tasker is going to be at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament. We'll talk with him live, and he'll talk with Bruce Smith, Bill Polian, Bill Hansen, and some others. Also, the Bills with another day of OTAs today. We'll talk to players as they come off the field. And we want to hear from you. Who's going to lead the Bills in sacks this year? They didn't get a whole lot of sacks last year. Stick around. One Bills Live starts right now.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker.
Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Orchard Park, where the weather's chilly, feels like football weather, little clouds overhead. The Buffalo Bills practicing as we speak on the grass practice field outside the Ed Pro Sports Training Center. Welcome to Orchard Park. We are inside the Ed Pro Sports Training Center in our One Buffalo studio. John Murphy with Bills Insider, Chris Brown from BuffaloBills.com. Good afternoon, Chris. Thanks for being with us.
Monday. Let's get it rolling.
Yeah, let's get it started. Chris is here because Steve Tasker is not. Steve, not one of his days off. Well, it's not essentially a day off. He is going to join us live from the Jim Kelly Celebrity Golf Classic at Terry Hills Country Club just outside Batavia. Steve is there playing right now, doing some interviews as well. He'll join us live in a couple of minutes to update us on that. I'm going to ask Steve this question, Brownie, but you've been around. Doesn't it seem like every year the Kelly Golf Tournament is on like a miserable, kind of cloudy, chilly day?
You know what? Almost it's funny year. You mention that, because my wife said that when she was looking at the previous year's footage that one of the news stations was running.
Yeah.
And she goes, my gosh, it's going to be crummy weather again this year.
Every year.
And it just seems like they cannot get a picturesque golf day. It's windy,
yep,
or
rainy,
overcast, and it's bizarre. Yeah.
But they're out there. They're playing. Steve has had a lot of success out there today. He has already talked to Bruce Smith, Phil Hansen, of course, Jim Kelly, Eric Wood, and Bill Polian, and all of those interviews coming up today from the Kelly Golf Tournament on the show. And Steve's going to join us live in a couple of minutes. In the meantime, we're here, Chris, with the Kelly weekend getting started last night. I was there for the Jim Kelly Celebrity Gala at the Adams Mark Hotel in downtown Buffalo. It was great to see Jim. He's battling through it. You know, he's had a rough go with the surgery a couple of weeks ago. More surgeries up ahead. But, man, it's good to see him. He's such a battler. He's inspiration. My wife asked me this morning, how's Jim doing? And I said, just his presence there inspires, I think, everybody in the room. You know what I mean? Just the way he battles through it, the way he at one point last night, and we're up on stage. I was helping out with the auction. They got a professional auctioneer. And Jim is there, too, trying to encourage the bidders. And at one point, I could tell that he was feeling it a little bit, you know, all that talking, all that energy. I said, Jim, just go sit down for a couple of minutes. We got this. And he said, no, I'm going to get through this. And he did. You know, he's amazing. He is amazing.
Well, I think we all know he's always kind of had that stubborn mentality that I'm not going to let anything limit me, you know, whether he's getting knocked out on a game field and coming back in the huddle and repeating a play, the same play four times in a row because he's a little dinged up. And Thurman's arguing with him in the huddle. You've heard Thurman's story about that, where he called the same play because he's stubborn. He's not coming out of the game.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing. He's not coming out of the game.
He wouldn't come off the stage last night. Yeah. So he is an inspiration. I'm sure he is to the golfers out there this morning. We'll hear from Jim, who, by the way, blurted out the fact that he's going to get the Jimmy G Award, right? It was a blurt. I don't think ESPN was ready for that to be announced.
They were not, no.
At the ESPYs this summer, in about a month or two, five, 6 weeks, Jim will get the Jimmy V Award, named after former NC State basketball coach Jim Valvano. I don't know a whole lot about the award.
So it's awarded for a deserving member of the sporting world who has overcome great obstacles through perseverance and determination. In large part over the years, it has been given to celebrity athletes who have battled cancer at some point in their lives. There are some exceptions, one of which is former Bills tight end Kevin Everett, who won the award in 2008. As we know, was paralyzed from the neck down, and I mean, literally came back from a life-threatening injury.
Yeah,
thanks to a lot of help from doctors like Dr. Cappuccino and all the people that took care of him here in Buffalo and got him back quite literally on his feet and walking again. So he had some semblance of a quality of life going forward. So, yeah, he won it in 2008 for his inspiring comeback story there. But there have been a lot of
Who won it last year?
People,
do you have a list?
Yeah, the list last year it was I'm not familiar with this person, but it was a teenage super fan of the Saints. Have you seen that kid, Jarius Robertson? So I guess he was born with biliary atresia. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. So it affects his rate of growth. He's a real short kid, but he's 15. Like he looks like a six-year-old in terms of height, but he's 15 years old because he's battling this condition since birth. Had to undergo two liver transplants, 13 surgeries. But you want to talk about a kid that can walk in and light up a room? It's that guy. So yeah. I wasn't surprised at all that he was awarded in that fashion.
Who else? Some of the winners over the years.
So the first recipient, you know, the year after Jimmy gave his speech was Kay Yao, who returned successfully to coach the NC State women's team to the ACC tournament championship game in the Sweet 16. That was back in 2007. Kevin Everett in 2008. Don Meyer had his left leg amputated below the knee after a vehicular accident in September 2008. Later diagnosed with cancer of the liver and intestines, but eventually returned to coach at Lipscomb, where he coached basketball. George Karl won it in 2010. Yeah. Anthony Robles in 2011. He was a Division I wrestler who wrestled with just one leg. He had a leg amputated, born without a right leg. And then Eric LeGrand, the well-known Rutgers University football player who was paralyzed from the waist down, neck down. And then 2013 was an interesting one. It was Team Hoyt. So it was Dick Hoyt who pushed his son Rick, who was born with cerebral palsy, in a custom-built running wheelchair, more than 1,000 long-distance running events for almost four decades to raise funds for cerebral palsy. Stuart Scott, as we all know, just a few years ago, Craig Sager in 2016, Devin Still and Leah Still. Remember the Cincinnati Bengals defensive lineman with his daughter who had been diagnosed with neuroblastoma, which is a form of cancer also.
So Jim Kelly will join their ranks. ESPN expected to make it official later this afternoon that Jim Kelly, Hall of Fame quarterback from the Bills, is expected to be, it will be named the winner of the Jimmy V Award at the ESPYs on, what is it, July 18th?
July 18th, yeah.
Okay, so it's not that far away. Chris Brown is with us. We're going to talk about OTAs with Chris, talk about the Bills. We're going to, on the show today, get somebody, we have a couple of target players in mind to come on the show after practice today. In the meantime, a lot of our show today will be trips out to Terry Hills in Batavia to talk with Steve Tasker, including right now the co-host of the show, our man Steve Tasker, joins us live from Terry Hills Golf Course in Batavia, New York. Steve, it's me and Chris Brown here. Thanks for joining us. Why is it that every year when the Kelly Golf Tournament comes up, the weather always stinks? What's the deal with that?
It does. It does. Every single time. It just stinks. I mean, we had the hottest May on record. You come out here, and it's like 55. It's threatening to rain, and it's windy. It's not the perfect day, but it doesn't really matter because this is the only – I think this is the only golf tournament in America that's not about golf. So everybody's still kind of happy to be here. You know?
Who are you playing with, Steve? You've got a couple of holes in already, I imagine?
Yeah, we started on number two. We just finished or just teed off on number six, I think. So we're still staring at about a 6.5 hour round. And the guys I'm playing with, great bunch of guys. Never met them before, as you know, as happens in all these scramble tournaments. They don't play too much golf, but it's nice to get to play with four good guys. And it's a long day. Everybody kind of knows what they sign up for. They're all into it. And Jim, it's a literally a festival out here. They've got tents all over the course with food, live music. It's awesome. It's a great event.
I know everybody kind of catches up at the gala the night before. So is today the recovery day, for lack of a better term?
Well, yeah, they tee it up. They kind of schedule tee off at like 11 instead of like 9 a.m., you know, because it is over here in Batavia. They got to bust these guys from the hotel downtown. And it takes a little while to wrangle up, you know, 50 celebrity guys are staying at the hotel, and they hit the gala last night. It is a little recovery. They have Bloody Marys right at the clubhouse all lined up. These guys pile off the shuttle bus or the drive, get out of their cars and stuff when they show up. So yeah, there's a little bit of that going on, but they know it's a long day. They kind of gear up for it. It's amazing how many guys have been here. You know, forget about 10 times or 15 times. I mean, I've been here 30. Phil Hansen's been here like 15. You know, it's just that kind of event. People show up, you know, and they've got double-digit years at this thing. So, and that's some of the celebrities as well. So it's a different kind of event. It's very family atmosphere out here, family-oriented, a lot of familiarity with everybody on the course. And that goes from not just the celebrities and all the guys that Jim brings in, but all the people who buy a foursome here every year and who've played with, you know, 15 different celebrities, 20 different celebrities. So it's a big family atmosphere. A lot of friends get back together once a year at Jim's tournament.
Steve, I was there at the gala last night. I had to help MC. I didn't see you. I know you were there. I did see two of your former teammates, some of your Super Bowl teammates, and they said the exact same thing.
Yeah.
John Davis, Pete Metzelaars, both asked me the exact same question. So are you sick of working with Tasker yet? They both asked me that question last night. I said, of course not.
And you said, what? Okay, all right. Yeah, everybody, it's kind of fun because I got there, and it's just the opposite. These guys parachute in. They're staying right at the hotel where the party's downstairs, and, you know, they're wanting to, you know, line up drinks and, you know, sit around and talk and drink. And I'm like, listen, I didn't have anything last night because, you know, I got to get home. I go home and sleep at home, right? I got to drive home, so I can't really do that. I come in, I take one lap around that main ballroom, say hello to the right people, and then I skedaddle out of there, and I watch the NBA Finals at home. So yeah, that was my night last night. But it was great to see everybody. It's one of those few parties. I don't know if anybody else, if you, Murph, maybe you're like this when you go to Jim's Brownie. You're probably like this too. Jim throws these galas, and there's like 1,000 people in the room, and I'm on a first-name basis with 800 of them.
Yeah.
It's an amazing event, and
that's not me.
It's a Buffalo. It is a Buffalo only event. You'll go someplace, and there would never be another event like this. And Jim has maybe two or three of them a year. It's pretty amazing.
It was amazing, and it was amazing. I was just saying to Brownie on the air here a minute ago, to see Jim, who you know, clearly he's still in recovery from his surgery a couple weeks ago. He refused to come off the stage, Steve. I mean, I think he inspired many people there with kind of his grittiness to getting through. You know, I said to Brownie a minute ago, hey, Jim, go take a break. We got this. You know, me and the auctioneer, we got this. He goes, no, I got to get through this. It's inspiring to watch him work so hard at something like that.
It's important to him. You know, it means something to him. You know, for all the charity events everybody takes part in, they're all over the country, and they're all very worthy causes and all that. You can tell when it's important to the people involved, and to have somebody of Jim's stature nationally to come out and pour himself body and soul into an event like this, you know, it really means something to him. Last night was no exception. He had his brother Dan lined up to do the speaking for him and stuff because, you know, Jim's still struggling to get words out and make it really clear, particularly on a loudspeaker system. He wouldn't have any of it. He got there and he said, I can't do it. He just had to step up to the mic and tell everybody what it meant to him to have everybody there. He did it again today. He's out here today tooling around, saying hello to absolutely everybody on the property. It's inspiring. And I was talking to a bunch of guys, you know, Phil Hansen we'll hear from later, and Bruce. He's an amazing guy. He didn't cease to be an amazing guy once he left the football field.
Yeah, I mean, and it's clearly, you know, recognized, now getting recognized on a bigger level here. You know, Jim, you know, saying today about the ESPN award that he's going to be receiving.
He wasn't supposed to announce that.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's not.
People are like Jim. No, Jim, don't say. You know, now it's too late. Right?
That's Jim. Jim also, though, isn't
it? ESPN. Right. Exactly. You know, Jim. You know, ESPN said they're going. No, don't. We got no. Jim just starts talking. Like, all right, now they're damage control. Now they're like, oh, yeah, all right, yeah.
Yeah, but
so
I think
Jim probably wasn't supposed to mention that. But
yeah, I mean, but Steve, I think the interesting thing here with that award is I think in many respects the legacy of Jim Kelly has completed the shift, I believe. He's always going to be recognized as a Hall of Fame quarterback, and there'll be a legacy, you know, to his life like that, but I think this shift has completely turned over now, especially with recognition on this level by ESPN, where the legacy is also going to include him being, you know, this public servant for the fight against cancer, the fight against leukodystrophies. I mean, he is going to be known just as much as an advocate for those causes, I think, as a Hall of Fame quarterback with where it's come. It's come this far.
Brownie, I think that's a great observation. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right, particularly with this Jimmy V Award. Think about how hard that would be, but he's done it. In the time that he was an NFL quarterback, going in the Hall of Fame, being all the story and ups and downs and the four Super Bowls and all of that stuff that he did, and then to have his legacy be remembered as something more than that off the field, which it's going to be. I mean, he's going to be an absolute heroic figure in the battle and the charities that he's a part of, the leukodystrophies and the battle for cancer, against cancer, and the stuff that his foundation has done. To have his legacy shift from as great a quarterback as he was, one of the all-time greats, to being that away from the football field and post-career,
right?
It really says a lot about the kind of guy he was. That's a great observation by you, and I hadn't thought about it like that, but you're right. His legacy is completely different now, so many years after he played.
We're with Steve Tatzker, who is live at the Jim Kelly Celebrity Golf Classic out in Batavia. Hey, if you got to jump up and go hit a ball, let us know, Steve. I know your foursome's still out on the course.
Listen, it's a little slow day. I think they probably haven't even putted out yet. I mean, it's that slow a day. So, it is going to be a long day. It's kind of – weather's kind of holding off, so it's going to be okay. But, like I said, I don't know if you can hear. There's music in the background.
Oh, yeah.
They got tents everywhere. We've already had one food stop. We played three holes, and we had to have a food stop. You have to stop and listen to music, and you talk, say hello to old friends, and you cross paths with different foursomes and other guys that are in for the tournament that you hadn't had a chance to say hello to. It's just it's about everything except golf. So the golf is just one way that brings you together, and it's a different type of event. So, yeah, we're fine now.
Hey, Steve, I know you did talk with former Bills GM Bill Poley in the Hall of Famer. I did last night as well. And we're going to play an interview you had with him coming up a little bit later in the show today. What kind of intel did you get from him about what's going on in the NFL? And I talked to him a little bit last night, maybe you did as well, about his involvement in that new spring league that's coming up. He's deep into that as far as he said, I'm the architect of football for that league.
Yeah, Whaley, that's all the interview is about. We talked for 15 minutes on, and you're going to hear it in a little bit, and that's all we talked about.
Yeah.
And it's happening. It's happening. In February, it's a real thing. They're going to be playing real football between the Super Bowl and the draft. There's going to be a 10-week season with eight teams. Bill is neck deep in it. He is the guy. And there's no better guy to do it. You hear him talk in this interview that we're going to have in a couple of minutes. It's phenomenal, the work he's put in on it and the names that they've gotten to be a part of it. Now, certainly the NFL has no connection with it, but they are keenly interested, and they're helping out in any way they can. And it's going to fly, and I think it's going to be a very viable and an interesting league. It'll be fun. They've got a lot of ex-NFL coaches with a lot of credentials behind it. They're gonna make it a developmental league, and it's gonna be fun. I can't wait for it to happen. We're gonna have something to talk about between February and April now. Besides the draft, it's gonna be pretty phenomenal.
The sense I got from Bill was that the league is, although they're not involved in it, the league supports it, and it's because of B. It really is a developmental league that many people have been looking for several years.
The only reason the league isn't a part of it is because of the antitrust laws that exist in the country. Otherwise, they'd be totally immersed in it. But it's, Charlie Ebersol, who's Dick Ebersol's son. Dick Ebersol, former head of NBC, and Charlie, his son, who's producer of the 30-30, get to get things there in it. Bill is one of the major, major players in it. And they've still got some things to work out. They're obviously going to tweak some of the rules for their league that are going to be different. It's going to be a 2.5-hour game. It's going to be totally, totally about developing young players. There's going to be no extra point or field or no extra points. It's all going to be 2-point conversions. They're going to take the kickoff completely out of the game. They're going to have a 30-second clock instead of a 45-second clock. It's going to be a very fast-moving game, and I think it's going to be really interesting to have fun with. They've got a contract with CBS. The NFL on CBS is going to be it's not going to be the NFL, but the CBS is going to be their television partners, and it's going to be on TV. It's going to be great.
I think it's going to be interesting, too, and I think the reason the NFL is so glued to it is because the more the college game separates from what the pro game is, I mean, the pro game has had to adapt to some of the developments that have happened in the college game just so they can apply the talents of those players as they come into the NFL effectively. You wonder if, this Alliance of American Football is going to replace college football in some ways as far as a true feeder system to have players that are more NFL ready to start from the jump and make a more immediate impact on rookie contracts, which is what the teams in the league are looking for, guys that can help them immediately play their kind of football.
Well, that's one of the things he said. They want to try and play NFL football.
Right.
It's going to look a lot like NFL football. They're going to run NFL defenses. They're going to run NFL offenses. They're going to have NFL play callers and coordinators, and they're going to do their best to make this a 10-week period where they can get a look at these guys against an elevated competition level and in an NFL atmosphere, both practice and game planning and all of that kind of thing. And it'll be interesting to see. And the pool of players they are is going to be anybody's going to be eligible except players that have college eligibility. So, and they're probably not going to get any college players vying for the draft, anything like that. But it will be guys who are, like, just out of the league or you know, guys who are struggling to make it in the league looking for a contract. And they're going to put together a slightly smaller rosters, maybe about 50, 53 guys total, with about 40, 45 on game day. And they're going to roll with it. And taking the kickoff out of the game is going to probably give them a little leeway in their rosters. So, they're going to make some tweaks to the game, but it's going to be a developmental game. They've got Mike Pereira, former head of officiating in the National Football League, is going to be helping them do that. They're going to have NFL-type officiating the whole nine yards. It's going to be they are on the ground and running with it with a February date just after the Super Bowl to get things started.
I look forward to that interview, Steve, with Bill Polian about that at 2 o'clock. Another guy you talked to, and I don't want to keep you much longer, but Eric Wood just officially reached that injury settlement last week. Eric Wood, I saw him last night. He looks a lot different than he did just 6 months ago here, doesn't he?
Yeah, is he about 55 pounds light?
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah,
about,
unbelievable.
About 55 pounds. He looks great. I wish I looked that good. He looks great.
He looks happy.
He feels good.
Yeah.
He looks – you know, and I think given the funky nature of which the end of his career happened, he's really relieved now to have that all behind him and be a retired NFL football player. He's doing really well. And it's one of those guys, we talked to him about how his career ended and the injury and that kind of how he's feeling now. It's a good interview. And you can tell, you're right, Murph, you can see a little bit of a sigh of relief on him to where his life is right now, and he's ready to move forward.
The Eric Wood interview received coming up at 1:30. One more thing to ask you, Stephen. This is about your weekend. I know Friday you went up to Hamilton, right, to see your son Luke play for the Ticats.
Yeah.
You saw them lose preseason game to Toronto. But you saw Johnny Manziel.
That's right.
Did you think? What did you see?
Yeah. You could see he came on right away and looked pretty good right out of the gate. Now, there's certain things that happened that, you know, you could tell the game was a little foreign to him still. I mean, he's only been up there a week or two. But his ability showed through. His arm is there. His ability to evade and make plays is there. He had a couple of scramble throws that were extremely good. He's a talented player. I know that June Jones, the head coach of the Tiger Cats, believes that if he would have been handled right at the NFL level, all the stuff outside of football aside, on his abilities and his quarterbacking play, he could be very successful in the NFL if he gets the right offense around him and the right play caller. June Jones is convinced that he can. So he's very happy to have him up there. He's not starting. Jeremiah Mazzoli still does that, but there's no question. Johnny Manziel acquitted himself pretty well in his first Canadian football game, even though the score was a little lopsided. The Tiger Cats, not when Manziel was in the game, but they turned it over five times in the first half, and you know the game got out of hand. But as a preseason game, looking at what I saw from Johnny, he's a good player. He's a good player up there, and June Jones believes that someday if he wants to, he'll be able to make the transition down to the States if he needs to.
How did Luke do first preseason?
If the opportunity's there.
How did Luke do in his first
preseason?
He had
one catch. He had one catch, had one long ball that was the defender made actually a nice play on, got his arm in, knocked away. Luke was kind of disappointed the way he played, but he was fine. He was doing good. And he held for the extra point guy. So Jerry Glanville, the defensive coordinator, who was my head coach so many years ago, said, "I'm now the second best holder he's ever seen. Luke Tasker's the best." So, yeah, at least he does one thing good, right? He holds for the kicker. So,
hey, Steve, thanks for wearing that OBL pullover that I represent. Anybody ask you what OBL is yet?
Hey. Yeah. They did. I have only one or two people. I says official beer lover of the Buffalo Bills, of course. No, I told them the truth.
Steve, thanks for this. We'll get you back in here tomorrow. We'll see you here.
You bet, guys. Looking forward to it.
Have
thanks,
fun.
Brownie. All right, Murph.
Yep.
See you. Steve Tasker, former Bills special teamer, co-host of the show, out there at the Jim Kelly Celebrity Golf Tournament in Batavia. He's got an interview with Bruce Smith coming up in just a couple of minutes here. We've got Eric Wood with Steve, Bill Polian, Phil Hansen. Steve worked hard. He earned his golf today, I think.
We're just, no pun intended here, but we're just going to pretty much be teeing Steve up today and have him go. I mean, he's going to kind of carry the show here for us today. You know, it's interesting. He's talking about Jerry Glanville being his former coach down in Houston before he came up to the Bills. June Jones was Jim Kelly's coach with Houston, the Gamblers.
That's right.
In the USFL, and now he's coaching in the CFL. What is it, almost 40 years later?
Amazing.
It's crazy.
Yeah. We had June Jones on the show a couple of weeks ago. We hope to get Jerry Glanville on. And I want to get to a Ticats game. I want to see Luke. I want to see, I don't know if Manziel's going to play or not. I want to get up there. I heard they have fun up there. Hey, our Twitter poll today, yes, we have one. It deals with this year's Buffalo Bills. It's pretty simple, and it's all speculative. But, you know, the Bills, it's such a rough time getting consistent pass rush last year. Not a whole lot of sacks. We wonder, who do you think might lead the team in sacks this year? That's our Twitter poll. Who will lead the Buffalo Bills in sacks in 2018, and why? We'll take your phone calls on this as well, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. If you'd like to vote in our Twitter poll, you can do it right now at on Twitter at OneBillsLive. Who will lead the Bills in sacks in 2018 right now on Twitter? 39% of you say Jerry Hughes, who finished with four last year. 24% of you say Shaq Lawson, who finished with four last year. 15% say Lorenzo Alexander, who he led the team 2 years ago in sacks, right?
Correct.
Lorenzo?
Yep. And 12.5.
22% say somebody else. They have somebody else in mind. Let us know what you think. We'll read your tweets. We'll take your phone calls. Lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. If I were going to vote on that, Chris, I'd almost think, I don't care, but just somebody get to double digits. I don't care who it is, you know, whether it's Trent Murphy, maybe he's one of the others. I don't know.
Yeah.
Somebody get double-digit sacks, please.
That would be nice. You know, I was talking to Lorenzo last week about, you know, looking at the 2018 defense and fixing the run defense and being more productive with the pass rush this year. And it's no secret that the biggest investment that the Bills made in the offseason was on their defensive line. And I thought their approach was very interesting. They didn't load up on pass rushers. What they did was get guys that will help the pass rushers that they already have. By signing Star Lotulelei and then re-signing Kyle, now you fortify the interior of your line. You know, you've got some backup help there as well. You drafted Harrison Phillips, who I think is going to absolutely have a rotational role as a rookie this year. They're going to prevent quarterbacks from stepping up in the pocket, which we saw time and again last year because the interior of that defensive line was somewhat compromised in its effectiveness, the trade of Darius notwithstanding. And so players like Jerry Hughes, when he would bust tail and actually get around the edge, the quarterback would simply just step up and away from him, and now the effectiveness of Jerry Hughes as an edge rusher is pretty much neutralized to the point where some teams didn't even have to double-team him all the time. And so, and Shaq Lawson was battling other things, injuries among, you know, he had a groin problem and all this other stuff, so he was relatively, you know, less effective than I think people anticipated. Now you've got Trent Murphy on that side on the edge also, who's probably going to rotate with Shaq to a certain degree, probably kick inside on passing downs. But you want to talk about an edge defender who's not going to let a guy escape out there. You know, it's Trent Murphy. And so I think the odds are very good for Jerry Hughes, based on all of those factors, to really get back to the numbers that we saw his first 2 years in Buffalo when he had back-to-back 10-sack seasons. So I'm going to vote for Jerry just because of all the other elements that have been added to that defensive front to cater to him being a more productive player for that defense.
What do you think? Who will lead the Bills in sacks this year and why? Give us a call. We're going to have lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Chris Brown in studio with us here today. We're here until 3. We're going to go back to Terry Hills to the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament in a moment. Go back to Steve Tasker with Bruce Smith in the next segment. Come on back for that. It's One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. We're just getting rolling on Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. John Murphy, Chris Brown in studio with us. Chris Brown, Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com. And you've watched some OTAs, Chris, including last week's open session last Thursday. They're on the field again today. You came up with five things you learned from week two of the OTAs. You know, it's hard. It's a snapshot of what they're doing.
Right.
And I'm reluctant to make any sweeping generalizations about anybody or anything based on the little snapshots we get. But a couple of things impressed me, and I looked through your five things you figured out, you've learned. One of the things is the tempo of practice. It doesn't look like your typical spring practice. They are fluid from one workout to the next, from one practice period to the next, and it's all business. And they get a lot done in these OTAs.
Yeah, typically they're finishing 15 minutes to 10 to 15 minutes earlier than the schedule allots.
Yeah.
And what that affords them is extra individual time even after the practice session is over. It gives you know, young players or players trying to master some nuance of the new offensive system going in, to spend an extra 5 or 10 minutes with their position coach and do some one-on-one work on the field, which I think any coach or player will tell you never hurts. So by the fact that they're that efficient with their teamwork gives the guys opportunities to get a little one-on-one time with their position coaches or coordinators after they're done, because they're getting done early. But I like the pace. I like the tempo. It's all business, as you said. And, you know, I think what's to be expected for training camp, you know, when the fans are there and they get a chance to look at this team, I think you should go under the general assumption that the defense is going to be ahead of the offense. That's usually the case every year. I think it's going to be exacerbated by the fact that it is a new system going in, combined with the fact that it is a three-way quarterback competition going on right now as well. And I asked Coach McDermott and I asked Coach Dable in the last 2 weeks, how are you striking that balance? Because you're trying to get your installs done with the offense while at the same time evaluating the quarterbacks. And I just get the sense that the primary focus right now is get the installs done. And it's almost as if the quarterback competition has taken a back seat, which almost sounds crazy to think of, because that's the guy you got to know about more than anybody else on the field. But I get the sense that they feel there's time to sort that out. Let's get the installs done. Let's get the system familiar with everyone first, and then we'll be able to better make quarterback evaluations therein.
It's worth noting, and it has been noted, that the rookie first-round draft pick, Josh Allen, is getting third-team reps so far in May and June. But I love Dable's answer when he was asked about that. He said, we don't look at it as a depth chart right now. We look at it as a rep chart. I think there's a significant difference there.
That was his money quote. It's a rep chart, not a depth chart.
Yeah.
And I think they've made a point of trying to get Josh extra reps. You know, I know one of the Thursday practices – not this past week, but the week before, at the end of practice, Josh, with his series of team-oriented plays, got 12, and then they gave him another 10 after that. So they're trying to rep him up to get him acclimated to the scheme as best they can, I think, because he is behind. I mean,
he's a couple of weeks behind,
right,
at least,
right? That's the fact.
Yeah.
He's a couple of weeks behind because he wasn't even a draft choice of this team. You know, when A.J. McCarron and Nathan Peterman were in here working with Brian Dable and the offensive players and coaches. So they're 2 weeks invested in the system, and Josh is playing catch-up. So it's not surprising to see him getting those extra reps. But I think, on the whole, he's been processing a lot of this pretty well. I have not come across any instances where Brian Dable had to back everybody off the ball and say, let's reset that because, you know, the check or the pre-snap call by Josh was wrong. I think he's on it. He's on top of it. I think his football IQ has been well documented. It's good to very good for a rookie right now. And so, and in also to take note of is the fact that Brian Dable is trying to keep it as simple as possible right now to blend with the efficiency that Coach McDermott is looking for in the practice session. So I think it's baby steps right now on offense, for lack of a better term.
On defense, and we're talking about OTAs, first 2 weeks. Chris has a post that went up on the the 31st, which was a couple days ago, about the first 2 weeks of OTAs, the five things we learned from first 2 weeks of OTAs. On defense, the other first-round pick, Tremaine Edmonds, those aren't baby steps. Those are giant steps. They are really putting the pressure on him to learn this defense, to call this defense. There's a lot on his shoulders, and I have to confess it worries me a little bit. I know why they're doing it.
Right.
I think it's the right move, but, boy, it's a lot to ask a young guy coming into the NFL for his first couple of weeks here.
I think the reason they feel comfortable doing that is because it's a kid that's wise beyond his years in many ways, a kid that's been studying film since he's 15 years old. So he's 5 years vested in that, and it's not just doing it at the most basic level. A lot of players come to the NFL, and they don't even know how to study film, and very often it's the veterans that are teaching them. Kyle Williams had to teach Marcell Dareus how to watch film. You know, it's a guy that was a number three pick in the draft, didn't know how to study film at the NFL level. Tremaine Edmonds knows how to do that because his dad did that for 10 years in the league and taught him. So I think it's a kid who can absolutely handle it because he has the mental acumen to do so. And I talked to him a week or so ago just about his level of comfort in telling a 35-year-old Lorenzo Alexander where he's got to line up or what check he's got to make pre-snap. And he goes, I've got no problem with that because that's going to be my job. I have to do my job. And I think the players around me understand that. And I have no problem telling a guy where he's got to line up. I don't care how old he is. So I got the answer that I think Bills fans wanted to hear. He is fully on board with all of the responsibility they're willing to put on his plate. And I think the most telling comment came from Leslie Frazier last week in his press conference when he equated the football readiness at the pro level of Tremaine Edmonds to be on par with that of Tre'Davious White at this time last year. We all heard how Tre'Davious looked like a pro's pro already, was handling things in probably the best way any rookie could. Last year at this time, he believes Tremaine Edmonds is doing the same thing. We all saw how Tre'Davious White's rookie season played out. If Tremaine Edmonds can make it 2 for 2, I mean, wow. Yeah. You've got two foundational anchors for your defense for probably the next 10 years.
Chris Brown is with us co-hosting today. We're going to get back to Steve Tasker in a moment. He's with Bruce Smith, a Hall of Fame defensive end. Want to engage you as well. Let us know who you think will lead the team in sacks this year. That's our Twitter poll that's been up for a little bit. Who do you think will lead the 2018 Buffalo Bills in sacks? And we asked the question because they didn't have a lot of sacks last year. 39% of you think it'll be Jerry Hughes. 24% of you think it'll be Shaq Lawson. 15% of you think it'll be Lorenzo Alexander. 22% have someone else in mind. Got lines open if you'd like to talk about it. We'll read some of your tweets in a moment. If you'd like to talk about it on the telephone line, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. During Bruce, go ahead.
We should note Shaq Lawson's body composition change, you know, with this Twitter poll, and we can get into that a little bit later. I know you want to tee up Bruce here.
Yeah, I was going to say, during Bruce Smith's long tenure with the Buffalo Bills, there was very little debate over who would lead the team in sacks every year. It was Bruce, and he made his way to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Back in town today with his number retired on the wall at New Era Field, Bruce Smith sat down today with Steve Tasker at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament. Let's listen in.
Okay, Bruce, thanks for being here. It's good to, thanks for coming on with us. I've taken a couple minutes. There's nobody who's under more pressure at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament than Bruce, because every media outlet wants to talk to you, including me. Thanks for putting me at the bottom of your list.
My pleasure.
How's it going? You got a chance? You got a chance to talk to Jim last night and all that, and we had dinner last night at your favorite restaurant.
We certainly did. Chefs, man, if you haven't eaten there, you got to go. It's simply amazing.
I got to bust on you. Yeah. 200 sacks does a lot, but only for 200 sacks does Chef open up when they're closed and cook for Bruce. The owner comes in, cooks for Bruce, and you and me and a couple of – and Warren Sapp and a couple of guys were in there. Does it ever get old having the red carpet rolled out for you?
No. It's not like that. We had that prearranged. I had to go in and do an interview for chefs that they're doing a special about how many years that the establishment has been in existence. And so he said he would cook while I'm there doing the interview.
The
owner, Louis. And I invited you guys along, and Warren Sapp had never eaten chefs before.
Oh, he was impressed,
but
too.
It won't be his last time.
He was taking bottles out in his pockets. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing now, because whenever I'm here in Buffalo all the time, people ask me what other guys are doing. You tell us what you're into, because you've been doing some real estate development for a long time now.
Yeah, I actually started real estate development back in 1995 through a dear friend of mine by the name of Dan Hoffler. And I would spend my off seasons learning about real estate and kind of getting mentored by this company called Amato Hoffler back in Virginia Beach. And as I knew my career was winding down, I knew I had to have something to fall back on. And one thing led to another. I invested in a property in 95. I started wanting to learn the intricate details of how the deals are put together.
Right.
And it was just fascinating, and being able to actually put a deal together and then see the buildings being built and come to fruition, the plan, it became very exciting, and I had an appetite to want to learn more and to want to do more. So I've done okay.
Right. Yeah, so at this point, 95, 05, 50, that's like 23 years you've been doing it, right? So how many properties are you involved with now?
Wow.
Give me a ballpark.
It's about, I'd say about 7 or 8, and I've got 3 in the makings right now. I'm working on 3
You
more.
Do have $1 million for every sack you have, don't you?
No, not quite. Not quite.
You're the ball. That's unbelievable. You know, okay. So it's amazing what 200 sacks get you. If you ever find a golf ball on a course and it has 200 sacks written on it, it's because this he has it written on.
Or 78 or HOF.
I told you I'd have it tattooed on me if I had 200 sacks. Anyway, so tell me about Jim. Come to Jim's tournament. I mean, you've been coming since the beginning.
Oh man, I think I've only missed maybe one.
That's same with me. I think I've been here 30 of them. I might have missed 2.
Man, this is probably one of the more fascinating times during the year, being able to come back, because it's like a family reunion. You know, you get to come back and spend time with you and see all the guys, Cornelius and Thurman and obviously Jim. And periodically, I would fly up here and see Jim to make sure he's doing all right so far as his cancer is concerned. But it's just a great time, and I enjoy it. I enjoy coming back and seeing the fans and obviously the food.
Oh, yeah.
The weather, we can do without.
I'm telling you, I'm not even going to try and apologize for the way. Every time this first Monday in June rolls around, it's like this. It's like raining. It gets chilly. We had the hottest May on record, and now it turns like this.
As soon as we leave, it'll be 80
As soon as
degrees.
The out-of-towners come in. See, we do that on purpose. It keeps the riffraff out of our town because they think it's always snowing here. One last thing. Yeah. We were talking. Did Chris Moore pay up yesterday?
Yeah, he paid up.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
We had a golf match yesterday, and we got rained out.
Right.
But not before you did some damage.
I took a few dollars from him. He's not as good as he used to be, but and I've gotten a little better.
You have gotten better.
Yeah.
When I wasn't looking.
Yeah, true. Very true.
All right.
Practice.
Yeah. Hey, it's great seeing you again. Thanks for being in town. Take care and have a great day, man.
Greatest special teams player that ever played the game, Steve Tasker.
All right. And there'll be a little something in your pocket. Sure. I'll give you the $5 I asked for.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
Steve Tasker at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament with Bruce Smith.
It's like Keystone Cops when those guys get together.
I don't know.
Not just Steve and Bruce, like any of that group. It's nuts.
I don't know many who can ask those kind of questions and make those kind of comments to Bruce Smith.
I was a very young reporter during the last 5 or 6 years of Bruce's career, and I would usually go up and ask Mr. Smith, do you have time for 3 questions?
Yes.
And he would say to me, I've got time for 3, but I'm counting them. So imagine being like a 22, 23-year-old Cub reporter.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, okay, let me look at my list there. What am I asking?
Steve's out there throwing
and he's busted on him. Like every question, he's busted on 200 sacks. It's crazy.
Yeah. We got more from Steve coming up at the Kelly Golf Tournament. He'll be talking with Eric Wood, with Bill Polian. With Phil Hansen, so stick around for that. We're going to break here. When we come back, we're going to talk to Bruce just mentioned Steve is the greatest special teamer. Pretty good special teamer coming on the Bills roster this year. Julian Stanford will be joining us live in studio when we return. John Murphy with Chris Brown. It's One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. John Murphy, Chris Brown in for Steve Tasker today. Steve is out at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament. Joining us in studio, Buffalo Bills signee a couple of months ago, back on March 14th. The Bills signed a veteran linebacker who's been around the league a little bit. He's in studio with us right now, just off the field from today's OTAs. Great to have Julian Stanford here. Julian, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Week 3 of OTAs.
Right.
Is there a kind of a drudgery factor as you move through these practices?
How much do you hate it? Let me see.
No, but you had 6. This is 7. You got, what, 4 more next week. What do you think so far?
So far, so good. I mean, I'm just trying to, you know, learn the playbook, kind of get the system down, kind of get acclimated to this, you know, new organization and kind of, you know, learn the team, learn the coaches and get in, you know, fit in. Well, I can.
Go ahead, Chris.
I saw an interesting comment last week from Jordan Poyer, and he was talking about trying to get the guys that are new to the team up to speed with it being the second year in the system for him. And he was saying that, you know, even though there are base installs that we all have. He said, really, there are up to 50 to 60 different kinds of calls that you could have on a given play. How do you process all of that stuff? I'm just, because for people that never played football at this level with this degree of complexity, the processing sometimes seems like a near impossibility. So how do you navigate that? You know, you've been in a couple of places already. You've been through this kind of process, learning the scheme.
Right.
Just tell me how you navigate it personally, you know, so you know your P's and Q's when you're out on the field.
Well, I mean, you know, starting with the off season, you know, we start with phase one and it goes over to phase two and three. And so kind of like, you know, you lay the foundation. And, you know, once they lay the foundation, that's when you, like, first learn to install, and then it kind of builds off of each other. And so they teach you little by little, and then, you know, through learning each step and each phase, you kind of, like, put it together, and then you go out on the field and you get an opportunity to kind of go through a full speed. I mean, it's definitely a process.
So is it strict? Do you just apply strict memorization there for yourself, or are you saying, okay, I got to remember when I see this look, we're in this?
Correct.
Or, like, how do you correlate?
Correct. I mean, you know, they give an initial call. You know, there's checks, depending on what the offense gives you, the motions, shifts, and things of that nature. Yeah. And you kind of communicate with the defense. The secondary communicates to the linebackers. Linebackers communicate to the front four, and it kind of just goes from there. And we all kind of communicate and stay on the same page.
Julian Stanford, Bills linebacker, special teamer, in studio with us. The Bills, I believe, if my math is right, are your fifth team in 7 years, right? What's that been like for you the last, you know, coming out of Wagner, coming out trying to win a job in the NFL? And, you've had some setbacks, let's face it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a journey. It's definitely a journey. I embrace it, and I'm appreciative of this journey. You know, this has been a dream come true since day one. Undrafted free agent, making an initial 53-man roster my rookie year. And so from there, it's just been, you know, been kind of chugging along, trying to, have my best day every day, trying to get better each and every day. And whenever I get the opportunity, trying to get out there and put my best film on tape.
The games you played in the league were with the Jets a couple of years ago, right?
That's correct. I played a good amount of snaps in defense last year and also some snaps the year before.
So that's where you feel like you've had the most opportunity so far with the New York Jets?
So far, yes. That's been my longest stint with a team. I was with them for about 3 seasons. My first year I got there, I was on practice squad. Then the last 2 years, I was on the active roster. So
you've been on some practice squads.
I have.
Yeah, you got that part down. What's that like? And how difficult is it to keep chugging along when, you know you can't play on Sunday, but you're out there practicing Monday through Saturday?
I mean, sometimes it can be frustrating because, like you said, you know, you go to work every single day. You know, you bust your tail and you try to do everything you can to perform as best you can each and every day and getting better. And then it kind of, you know, kind of hurts a little bit when you don't get to dress on Sundays and get out there and showcase what you can do. But, I always like to think of it, you know, just stay ready for when the opportunity comes, because at some point in time, your opportunity will come, and don't let the opportunity pass you by.
You obviously saw this as a good fit. I mean, you signed here. When you look at the lack of depth that previously existed here at middle linebacker, knowing Preston Brown's in Cincinnati now, would you say in your time in the league that this might be the best opportunity you've had to earn a job, you know, at a defensive position where you can contribute, you know, maybe on a more regular basis than some of the other opportunities that have come across your path and your time in the league?
I mean, I wouldn't say this opportunity is any better than any other system.
Okay.
I think they have there's a great group of linebackers, a great core. I just felt as though it was time, it was time for me to move on and, you know, try a different opportunity. You know, I like Buffalo is a great place. Mm-hmm. As I get here, fans are great. The organization is great from top to bottom. And I just felt like it was a good opportunity for me to come in, showcase what I can do, you know. So,
hey, Julian, you grew up in Connecticut and found your way to Wagner College on Staten Island.
That's correct.
Tell me about Wagner and why you decided to go there and how your college career worked out there.
Well, coming out of high school, I wasn't like a five-star recruit. I didn't get offered from a ton of schools, so Wagner was one of the two schools that I got offered from. It was also Wagner and Central Connecticut. They play in the same conference.
Yep.
And, me being from Connecticut, Central Connecticut's a great school, but I wanted to, kind of start a new chapter in my life, kind of, venture off a little bit, get away from home a little bit. So I felt that Wagner was an opportunity for me to go kind of a little way, far from home, but not too far at the same time. And there's great opportunity in the city. And I just felt it was a good fit for me.
You started out, I believe, as a defensive end, right? They moved you to outside linebacker, and you made plays, right? I saw some senior year, right? A couple of interceptions for touchdowns, return for
touchdowns. Yeah, we started off my freshman year, we were in a 4-3, and so I was kind of a 4-3 rush end. And then I believe my sophomore year, we kind of transitioned over to a 3-4, and that's when they moved me to outside linebacker. And, you know, it was kind of similar at that point because I was rushing off the edge most of the time. I would drop in coverage some of the time. And as I got more comfortable with the position, it allowed me to do more. And then, obviously, like you said, going into my senior year, you know, I was extremely comfortable in the system. And I was kind of like just on autopilot. And I was playing, making more plays and things of that nature.
Your career has largely been, at least your pro career, has largely been based on change.
Right.
Different places, different schemes. And on top of a new defensive scheme here, you're going to have to get adjusted to some of those special teams changes on kickoffs now. So
definitely.
What are you anticipating based on, you know, the rule changes that are coming down the pike here? Mm-hmm. What are you anticipating are going to be the biggest changes for some of the roles that you have played in your time, you know, on kickoff?
I think it's still kind of new, so we're still navigating through it now. We just kind of got introduced to the kickoff rules and things of that nature just came out. So we're still trying to navigate through and, you know, learn the new rules and figure out what teams could possibly do since the new rule changed. There's no you can't have a two-man wedge anymore.
Right.
There's no running starts. So obviously there's going to be, you know, coaches will come up with different schemes.
More room on the back end for those three guys back
there. Yeah. So that too, I mean, how are you going to kick off the ball? You're going to kick it off, you know, what do you kick? Touchbacks? Is there going to be more touchbacks, less touchbacks? There's a strike zone now. You can't, you know, there's no – so there's a lot of different things, and you know, that come with the new rules. And so we're still trying to navigate through and figure out what teams could possibly do, what are the pros and cons of the new rules. So,
I've heard a couple of people speculating, because nobody really knows, Julian, but some people think there may be a bigger role for, you know, smaller guys like yourself in the new kickoff, right?
No more D-linemen.
Right.
Linemen you're going to see
the thing. So since there's no wedges,
that
kind of takes that factor out. You know, initially that was my kind of thought as well. Like, okay, it's going to turn to a faster unit. You know, there's going to be, obviously, I don't think there'll be less big guys in the back end. So I mean, I don't know. It's going to be pretty interesting to see how things unfold. I mean, I think blocking on the return team is going to be a little bit tougher. You know, because you're going to have guys on kickoff team that are, you know, they're running fast on the field and they fly, and it's like before you used to send them to the wedge and now you can't.
Right.
So how do you block those guys? You know, it'll be interesting
Nobody
to see.
Knows. And in fact, I've heard people say that the first week or two of preseason might be really interesting when teams see what they're doing and other teams say, oh, that's a good idea. Let's try that,
right?
Preseason and kickoff could be pretty interesting.
Because when you're talking about the wedge, there was a destination point for you guys on kick return to focus on, knowing they were coming to the ball anyway.
Correct.
Now it could be helter skelter back there.
Tough. I mean, you can't chip the kick. You can't chip guys on the kickoff team. You know, some coaches and schemes would do that to slow guys down. Mm-hmm. Like I said, sending guys to the wedge, and you can't do either one of those things. So it's like, now, how do you block a fast five? How do you block a fast four? What do you know? How do you navigate through those things? And I think with the new rules, it's going to be interesting to see how things play out.
Interesting time in the league for sure.
We're Julian
Interesting
Stanford.
But exciting.
Yeah. Julian Stanford, Bills linebacker, special teamer, is joining us in studio. So we said this is your fifth team right before we started this interview, and I asked you how you're doing here, and you said you really like the culture here. You've been on four other rosters over the last 7 years. What is different about the culture you found here?
I think that the culture here, you know, from day one, you know, I felt like the whole organization was welcoming with open arms. I felt the fan base was welcoming with open arms. You know, once I got into the building, met the players, got in the locker room. I feel like the locker room is a very close-knit, family-type setting. They care a lot about you as a person as well as a player, and I think those are big things, and it kind of makes you want to play for each other and do more for each other because it's like a family.
Guys want to play. Guys want to earn money, obviously, and guys want to be successful. But as a guy who's moved around the league as a free agent, where does culture fit in on the list of things you're looking for? I mean, atmosphere, culture, attitude, is that – at the top of the list? Is it somewhere in the middle?
I think it's at the top of the list.
Really?
It's definitely at the top of the list because, to me, you know, if you obviously you're doing what you love to do. But if you're doing it what you love to do in the environment that you like, it makes you want to do it more, and it makes you want to give it your all. You know, Coach always talks about playoff caliber. You know, when guys, you look to your left, you look to your right, you know guys are doing what they need to be doing, taking care of what they need to be taking care of. It makes you want to fit in and do your role, do your part to put the puzzle together to all – achieve a common goal.
Not to say it doesn't exist elsewhere in the league, but the way, you know, you hear about this being a cutthroat league. Guys look at players at their position as a threat. I don't get that sense here. It almost seems like let's all pull on the rope. You know, I know Lorenzo always talks all the time about, you know, I've got to pay it forward and make the guy behind me better, even though in a year or two he might be in my role. So is that uniform throughout this roster in terms of that kind of approach where you're all teaching it together, learning it together for the greater common good, I guess, more than anything
else? I definitely get that. You know, I think that from top to bottom, like you said, I think that that's how it is, at least for the linebacker group and everything else that I've seen. That's exactly how it is. Guys are always constantly trying to help one another, you know, trying to help you learn the system if you're a newer guy, trying to coach each other up and trying to, you know, give little tips here and there on what they may see, how they may read things and what they may do to kind of help each other get better. So
What's your goal here this summer and moving into the season? What do you want to get done here?
Well, obviously in the offseason, I want to come in and get acclimated to the defense as well as special teams. I kind of want to learn the system and learn how they do things here and kind of just continue to build and get better each and every day, whether it's getting more comfortable in the system, learning the playbook down, so that way when we come back and it's time for training camp and it's time to hit the ground running, I can just play fast and showcase what I can do.
How do you like living in Buffalo? You've been here for almost 2 months now, right?
So far, so good. Yeah. I've been introduced to a lot of good restaurants, you know, a lot of good food and things around to do. There's a lot to do, actually. And I think some people, you know, me, when I was first coming up here, I was like, oh, what do they have to offer? It's close to Canada, so I went to got an opportunity to go to Niagara Falls and stuff like that. So it's pretty, so far, so good. It's pretty good.
And you got family still in Connecticut? I mean, that's not too far away. I mean, it's a quick flight, so you're expecting a lot of family fans up here for games in the fall? And
Actually, I am. And I actually have some family in Buffalo as well.
Oh, okay.
So it's pretty nice.
What do you got, aunts, uncles?
Aunts, uncles, and cousins. Yep.
Okay.
So you spent some family time as
right.
well.
That's right.
Hey, Julian, thanks for this. Thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having
me. Good luck to you. Julian Stanford is a linebacker, special teamer, signed back in March with the Buffalo Bills here for OTAs. Chris Brown and I back with more in a moment. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills have wrapped up today's OTA. They've got four OTA practices this week. Thursday's is open to the media. And then next week, the Bills get into their mandatory minicamp before they break for a little bit before training camp begins. The schedule for training camp is scheduled to come out later this week. Jim Kelly's got his golf tournament going on as we speak down in Batavia at Terry Hills Country Club. Kelly, speaking to the media today, and we'll hear some of his comments in a moment ago, he did announce that he's going to receive the Jimmy V Award at the 2018 ESPY Awards ceremony next month. Kelly said, I got a call notifying me that I'll be honored with the Jimmy V Award at the ESPYs July 11th. Is it the 18th or the 11th? I think it's the 18th. The Jimmy V Award, annually given to a deserving member of the sporting world who has overcome great obstacles through his perseverance and determination. Several former Bills and football and other celebrities on the course at Terry Hills in Batavia right now at Jim Kelly's annual golf tournament. Rob Gronkowski confirms that he will attend the Patriots mandatory minicamp this week after skipping the voluntary organized team activities this offseason. Gronkowski says he will be there. He'll be ready to go. Gronkowski, 29 years old, he told Coach Bill Belichick in April that he would play for the Patriots this season. Quarterback Tom Brady, who also has not attended the Patriots OTAs, expected to be at this week's minicamp as well, according to owner Robert Kraft. Zach Miller continues to battle his gruesome knee injury, but he will continue his career in Chicago. The Bears signed Miller to a one-year deal for a minimum salary. He's 33 years old, highly doubtful to play this year with that knee injury. Free agent linebacker Michael Kendricks has agreed to a one-year deal with the Cleveland Browns worth up to $3.5 million. Stanley Cup hockey. The finals resume tonight. Vegas at Washington for Game 4. Capitals lead the series 2-1. Face-off tonight at 8 o'clock on NBC. NBA Finals, Golden State pulled out a 122-103 win over Cleveland last night to take a 2-0 edge over the Cavaliers. Stephen Curry finished with 33 points, 9 three-pointers in that game. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy with Chris Brown, Steve Taskers at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament. We're going to hear from him a little bit later on this hour. He talked with Eric Wood. We'll hear from his conversation with Bill Polian and Steve Tasker and Phil Hansen coming up as the show moves along. Brownie, you've been following the NBA Finals?
A little bit. I mean.
Did you watch last night? Because I did not. I was at the
Kelly thing. I only caught the last 5 minutes running around soccer tournament all weekend. But, last 5 minutes and the game was already in hand. And I don't know. I like watching NBA, but I just – it's hard to get up for this one for me because I kind of think it's a foregone conclusion.
Hmm. I still think it'll be competitive.
I think Cleveland maybe gets one game.
We'll see.
I think they just don't have the horses to run with Golden State. They got LeBron and a bunch of guys. Kevin Love still doesn't look right coming off the concussion. Like, he's not as big an impact as I thought he could be for them. Maybe he turns it around in a couple of the Cleveland games, and then maybe they get one that way.
Yeah.
But the way that Golden State can just pour it on for like a 3 and 4 minute stretch, unless you can match them from a 3-point shooting standpoint, you can't trade twos for threes.
Usually that comes at right as the second half begins for Golden State, too, third quarter.
And yeah, it's just a barrage. And there's, what are you going to do? You're going to guard guys at 30 feet?
You
open up the rest of the floor, and I think that's why Houston created the model that they did down there. They said, we can't beat them, we better join them. Yeah. And they've built their team with the express purpose of playing Golden State's game better than Golden State, and they came awfully close, and maybe if they had a healthy Chris Paul in Game 7, maybe it's Houston in the finals, not them.
Yeah.
Because I think the Warriors did get a little complacent in those Western Conference finals, and that's why it went 7.
I really hope the defining moment, and it might turn out to be, but I hope the defining moment of the finals is not J.R. Smith's mistake in Game 1. And I'll tell you what brought that to mind.
That was pretty bad, dude.
It was really bad. There's a piece of video, you can find it easily on the internet, of the ESPN ABC camera focused on the Cavs bench right after that. You know, it went to overtime, right?
Right.
The last few seconds. And it's Smith sitting down. LeBron is two
next
seats
to him,
away.
Yeah.
And LeBron is clearly distraught. And at one point, it's about a 2.5-minute piece of video. It was the timeout that preceded overtime. And they sat there. LeBron had nothing to say to his teammate.
Well, he said it on the court
after it
happened.
And the look on his face, he almost looked like he was ready to cry. And I hope that would be awful to me if their season ended with that as the defining moment.
Well,
I'm not rooting for the Cavs. I like Golden State. I love the way they play offense. And I think they're going to win. I thought it might be a competitive 7-game series. I have doubts now that it'll go that way. But I just hope that doesn't define the whole series of mistake like that.
Let me put you in LeBron's shoes here, Murph. All right? You
sure.
Go out. You score 51 points. Okay? You've done everything possible to win this game. You get jobbed on a charging call gets reversed, and then your teammate is asleep at the wheel after getting a crucial rebound in a tie game with 6 seconds left, and you're wide open at the top of the key after dropping 51 on the Warriors, and he doesn't pass you the ball because he thought they were ahead. I think you'd have the same kind of look on the bench over there, like, what the hell else do I have to do? I got to think for these guys now, too?
And him so distraught.
I don't blame
him. Despondent. Yeah, it was disturbing. I encourage you to take a look at that video if you haven't. We're not here to talk about the NBA. We're here to talk about the Bills and the NFL. Going to hear more from Steve Tasker. Want to hear from you. We got phone lines open. Our Twitter poll is up. Who will lead the Bills in sacks this year? Pretty simple question. Who do you think will lead the team in sacks this year and why? Twitter, you can vote on Twitter at OneBillsLive. Right now, 40% of you think it'll be Jerry Hughes, who had 4 sacks last year. 40% of you think it'll be Shaq Lawson, who also had 4 sacks last year. 15% of you think it'll be Lorenzo Alexander. 22% have somebody else in mind. Let us know what you think. We've got more than 2,000 votes in. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We've had some tweets on this, Chris. Lazy Leprechaun tweets in, Lawson and Hughes both tied for a team lead in sacks last year with 4 each. I personally have been a huge fan of Shaq since he was drafted in field. With his hard work this offseason, a new mindset, I believe he proves why he was a first-round pick this year and leads the team in sacks. So that's a vote for Shaq Lawson. You spent some time, right, talking about Shaq Lawson?
Talked to him, yeah.
And with Shaq Lawson last week.
Yeah, he I think, has finally figured it out. He's finally figured it out. You know, his first year here obviously was marred by the shoulder injury in minicamp, missed the first half of the season, was really playing catch-up for the second half of his rookie year. And then last year he has that groin injury early in the season, kind of tries to play through it, but really isn't effective in any way, shape, or form, and winds up on injured reserve come the end of the year. And he said, the light bulb moment for him was sitting at home watching the Bills playoff game. It ate at him. And he said, I got to do whatever I can to make sure I stay on the field. Because he wants to be a part of that. He wants to be a part of playoff football. And, you know, I think having been in that kind of an atmosphere with all the success he had with the Clemson team, I think he wants that again, but I think he knows that it's going to require a greater commitment at the pro level than it ever did at the college level, where if you were just physically gifted, you can be on the field every week, you can make plays. Here you can't do that. You got to be dedicated to your craft. You got to take care of your body. And so that's what he's done. He has basically shaved off 12 pounds of weight. So he's 12 pounds lighter. His body fat percentage is down to 17%, which is pretty good for a defensive lineman, even an end. And he feels faster. He feels more fluid. Now, it's hard to see the difference on the field in OTAs because the linemen really aren't playing real football yet. The pads aren't on. They're not really hitting. So it's hard to see what differences it has made. But it's clear to me that he has this newfound confidence that he can get back to the player that made him a first-round pick of this franchise based on what he's done with his body. And now he already has a plan laid out for what he's going to be doing in the 5 weeks between the end of June minicamp coming up here in a couple of weeks and reporting for training camp at the end of July. He's going down to Atlanta, and he's going to work with Chuck Smith, the former defensive end in the NFL, played for the Falcons and I think finished his career with Carolina. Pretty accomplished defensive end. He's going to work with him because he has a training program specifically for defensive ends, outside linebackers, and hybrid-type players, working on pass rush techniques, training, all of those things. So he knows it's an important year for him. And if not being in that playoff game last year wasn't a wake-up call, the signing of Trent Murphy certainly was.
Yeah. See, let me ask you this about Shaq Lawson, Chris. And, you know, going into his third year, I think clearly he's a guy who would benefit and has benefited, as you point out, from being around the Bills for a couple of years and growing up, both on and off the field a little bit. I wonder how much of a – not that he has a target on his back. I don't believe that. But this new regime didn't draft him. Has really no stake in him. So if he doesn't come out and make the kind of changes and the kind of impact that you described and what his goal is, which is admirable, is he in trouble, you think? Or, I mean, how much do you think he feels that pressure to produce, knowing that this current regime, does, you know, he's not their guy. They didn't use a first-round pick on him.
I'll give you the quote that he gave me that makes me feel he does. His quote was this: my attitude has changed. I come in every day like my job is on the line. Just the way I approach things and I handle things now, I come in like I'm fighting for my job. Just take one day at a time, continue to stay focused, develop as a pass rusher. The mindset has shifted for him.
Good.
I think he came in being a first-round pick, you know, much ballyhooed and whatnot, coming from a very successful college program, and I think he felt he had a grace period. I can just kind of show up, you know, practice, and I'll be on the field. I'm a first-round pick. I'm going to start, all of that. And when the regime change happened, that went away, and now he's not on the field because he's hurt, because he's not taking care of his body. And I think he's sitting there watching that playoff game going, oh, crap, this coaching staff in this front office is building something here, and if I'm not smart, I'm going to not be a part of it very soon. And so I think that was the light bulb moment for him, like I was saying. And it looks like he's rededicated himself to his craft, hopefully for his own benefit and for the benefit of this pass rush and this defense. Because I think the defense is going to have to take a big step forward if this team is going to come close to winning the number of games they won last year. Because I think the offense this season is going to be a work in progress as they move through the year. I'm not saying it's not going to be successful. I just don't know if it's going to be at peak operating efficiency in week one in September.
I hope you're right about Shaq. I'd like to see him succeed, but I do think, you know, for after a couple of years, there are plenty of folks who wonder if he'll ever, you know, be ready to contribute. He hasn't been a major contributor for
a short leash.
Yeah.
I think it is a make or break year for him this season. I don't think there's any question about that.
What do you think? Who will lead the Bills in sacks in 2018? Give us a call. We've got lines open at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. And on Twitter, from the tweet sheet from Daryl F29, who will lead the Bills in sacks? He said the easy answer is Hughes or Lawson. He says, I'm going against the grain because Shaq still has a lot to prove. We just talked about that. and Jerry, whose skills may be declining. Maybe, he says. I say Kyle. He now has Star there to eat up blockers, allowing him to get pressure, which he's always shown a knack for. That's a stretch, I think. I'm just going to look up and see what Kyle's
best
year
was. Well, he had a 10-sack season.
Yeah.
When Mario and Jerry and Darius were all up on that line.
Right.
And I think three of them had double-digit sack seasons. It was Mario, or even Darius had a double-digit sack season that year.
That was 5 years ago, 10.5 sacks.
Right. So, you know, if he stays healthy, I think there will be more opportunities. I mean, he had to absorb a little bit more of the dirty work last year once Darius was traded. There was a void there. I don't think there's any question about that. And so it rendered his effectiveness, you know, it neutralized him somewhat in terms of his effectiveness as a pass rusher. And so this year, yes, with Star doing the dirty work for the bulk of the downs, as we're all anticipating, it could potentially free up Kyle. Maybe to a couple of more one-on-ones. Maybe they're, you know, you're going to have to make a decision there. Are you going to double Jerry? Are you going to double Kyle? If, you know, Star, is he going to take up two blockers? If he can effectively take up two, it should spell one-on-ones for Kyle, which should spell more production. But I really think that's a wait and see. I don't know if I'm ready to stamp that and say, yeah, Kyle's going to rip it up and have 10 sacks.
My sense is this defense doesn't really produce sacks from the interior guys that much, right?
No.
And well, they didn't last year.
No, it's usually an end-based sack production thing, and then even some linebackers chip in on occasional blitzes. You know, Leslie Frazier doesn't dial up the blitz all that much, and
right.
I don't expect him to change his spot. So, yeah, I mean, it's an end-based production-type defense with respect to sacks, although I will say the history of this defense usually has teams near the top of the league in sack total. And it's not just about sacks because, you know, again, in a long conversation I had with Lorenzo last week, he said, if you go back and actually watch our film last year, there were a lot of instances where we're getting pressure, we're hurrying throws. He said, look at the year our secondary had last year. He said, yes, they made a lot of plays, but guys like myself, Jerry, we're, you know, a hand scrape away from dragging a quarterback down by his jersey. He's hurrying a throw. It's in the air or it's fluttering because we made initial contact even though we didn't quite bring him down, and it was causing turnovers which benefited our defense. So he said, I'm not making any excuses. The sack number was too low. It has to be higher. But he's clearly, to me, of the opinion that they are not as far off as maybe last year's sack number might indicate.
I gotcha. He Lorenzo also thinks they're going to be a top five defense. That's a jump. That's a major jump.
That's a major jump. Well, and you know, you can also take this with a grain of salt, too, Murph, because the games are the games and you didn't perform in them.
Right.
But that 3 week stretch,
I know,
where they couldn't stop anybody on the ground,
I know,
that crushed their run defense ranking. I think they were 12th before that 3 week stretch started, and they went all the way down to 29th. And they can only get it back to 26th against the run by the end of the season. Because, I mean, we're talking a 47-10 game.
Yeah.
We're, you know, blowout games.
Saints just crushed the
I mean,
steamer.
It was, oh, my gosh. You and I thought the Saints were going to the Super Bowl we watched them play.
I
was like,
did.
Wow, that is a Super Bowl team right there. But it was just a confluence of the Saints playing their best ball and the Bills' defense probably playing their worst of the entire season last year.
Who's going to lead the Bills in sacks this year? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. We'll take a break. We come back, we're going to hear from Jim Kelly at his golf tournament, plus Steve Tasker returns. He'll sit down with Eric Wood, now former Bills center, from the Jim Kelly golf tournament. That's coming up next. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown in studio with us because Steve Tasker's down at Jim Kelly's golf tournament. It's a scramble format, so Tasker's group, I'm guessing, is probably 6 or 8 under par by now. He's pretty good.
Yeah,
you know, he don't.
What
he
isn't
talk
he good at
that.
Though? You know what I mean? He's like one of those athletic guys that can do anything.
So one of the big issues with Steve coming on the show now, he's been on since April 23rd as the regular co-host. So what are we talking about? 6 weeks or so?
Yeah.
And I was teasing him. I said, well, it's going to hurt your golf, your handicap, right? You're in here every day instead of playing golf. His handicap has gone down since he started on the show.
Yeah, because the show starts at noon, Murph. It doesn't start at 6.
He doesn't play as much golf as he used to, and his handicap has gone down. It's maddening, right? It's crazy.
That's why I don't play that game.
He's having fun, I'm sure. We're going to hear more from...
I don't have the patience for it.
Yeah, Steve's got patience. We're going to hear from Steve and Eric Wood coming up in a moment. Jim Kelly spoke at his golf tournament today, as you may imagine. And Jim, of course, recovering from the surgery, the most recent surgery on his throat and mouth cancer. He did meet with the media, though, today. And Kelly let the cat out of the bag. He's going to get the Jimmy V Award at this year's ESPYs coming up in July. Here's what Jim Kelly had to tell the media today about that. He said he just got the call this morning.
People talk about the Kelly's tough part. Yeah, it is, but after a while, even when you're strong like that, you sometimes look and wonder why all this continues to happen. And then, to be honest with you, I know why. I've been through a lot, but faith is my number one. And I know why I'm still here. I know why I'm going through it. Be able to tell other people out there who are going through similar things, never to give up. And I was just told... about a week and a half ago that I'm receiving a Jimmy V, an ESPY award for the Jimmy V Award. And to me, people are saying, that's awesome. I go, yeah, it's awesome. The only thing bad about it is you had to go through a lot in order to get that award. But I just know in my heart that the good Lord has put me in a situation to help not only the people out there who are suffering from cancer, but little kids, too, that are going through tough times. To never give up, keep fighting because you never know.
Jim Kelly, Hall of Fame quarterback, speaking at his golf tournament this morning in Batavia. He also updated his health. He gave the media out there at the golf tournament an update on his recent surgery to remove cancer. That was just a couple of months ago. Here's what Jim said about his current status of his health.
As people out there know, when you have cancer, you never know what tomorrow holds. And when I was diagnosed for the first time, it scares you. Second time, even more, and going in the third time, I don't even worry anymore. It is what it is, and if it's coming back, coming back. But you know what? One thing I've learned through my travels, you never know. And just talking to so many people out there that have been through different things, and I prayed that I would be here for this. The big test is going to come. My next surgery is June 21st. My football camp for kids is 4 days later. So I pray, and I'll be there no matter what, but I don't know how much I'm going to be able to do what I used to do, but as long as I can get out there, I will be there for those younglings because that's what it is. I love the kids. That's why I do this. That's why I do my football camp, and God willing, I'll be able to do it for many, many more years. As you well know, a lot of things on my plate right now, and number one is trying to stay healthy. I'm already down past my playing weight, so I've lost almost 20 pounds again, but I won't be able to eat solid foods till September, which to me, I don't like because I look at a piece of pizza that I love. I look at chicken wings I used to eat. I loved them. I tried to put them in a blender and grind them up. It just doesn't taste the same. But you know what? It is what it is. And I just know for my traveling that, man, I don't have it that bad. There's so many people that have it a lot worse. And I know I say it a lot, but I travel. I see. And, I'm not going to get into that. But the thing is, I'm here, and that's what counts.
There's no stopping him. There's no stopping him.
No. When he was at rookie minicamp a couple of weeks ago, you know, I'm just kind of locked on the field. And I don't know. This is just me. Everybody goes up to him, says hello and everything. And a lot of times, you know, he's not coming to practice to be glad-handing people. I just leave him alone, you know. I just kind of let him observe, do his thing. That's why he's here. He just wants to watch some football. You know, I don't go up and glad, you know, all that stuff. I just leave him alone, let him be. He comes walking down the sideline to say hello to me, and I'm just like, Jim, like, it's good to see you. I said, I was just trying to leave you alone over there so you can just watch practice, enjoy it. He's like, no, it's good, man. He goes, I had to come say hi. How you doing? All right. He's asking me how I'm doing. Jeez. And it's like, you know, I'm like, Jim, you look good, you know. And it's like Steve said, because Steve obviously has a lot more contact with Jim than you and I do, you know, especially face-to-face contact. You know, they have dinner every once in a while. And like Steve said, Jim is great from the neck down. I mean, he gave me a firm handshake. I mean, his strength is there. Yes, he's walking with a cane, but from the neck down, from the neck down, he's fine.
Yeah.
It's just all of that chemo and radiation up top that's really kind of the sarcoma and all of that stuff. It's just, it takes a toll. But man, he's battling through it. You really got to tip your hat to him, because I don't know there's too many people on this earth that could do all of that.
And he sets these targets for himself. He's already talking about surgery, what, June 21st, and 4 days later his
I'll be at the kids' camp.
4 days later. But you know what? Who's going to doubt him? Who's going to say that won't happen? You can't, because he's already demonstrated that he'll do that.
Yeah.
He's amazing. Man, we pull for him so hard. I root for him so hard now. And you're right. He's got a different – that was a very good point. Steve was right. I mean, he's got a different
– his legacy has shifted.
Yeah.
I mean, and this –
and then you think about his contemporaries. You know, Marino, you think of Marino, you think about Dan Marino as a player and what he did and how great he was. You think
and
about
he's
Kelly?
Got a kid with special needs.
Yeah. But you think about Kelly, and you're right. His whole legacy, his whole identity has shifted into a totally different –
yeah, and I think the stamp on it is this ESPY Award that he's going to be receiving. I mean, it's official now. Yes, he's always going to be remembered by, you know, people that are fans of the Bills – you know, as a Hall of Fame quarterback who took this team to four straight AFC titles. But you talk to anybody else in the rest of the country, yes, they know him as a football player, but his legacy for everybody else in the United States will be an advocate for universal newborn screening, an advocate for kids fighting leukodystrophies, you know, and an advocate for the fight against cancer. That is what his legacy is going to be for all of those people. And I think this ESPY Award is signifies that shift.
Yeah.
I think it's happened. It's official now, and that is what he is. And it's very clear, even by his comments today, that he embraces that 100%. I think he knows, and you know, finding his faith has been a part of this, and his wife Jill deserves a ton of credit for that part of it. But you know, he is a man of faith now, and I think that's why he is at peace with what he has had to endure, because he even said it in those comments there. Whatever, I don't even worry about it anymore. And why? It's because he's firm in his faith that no matter what cards he's dealt with, whatever cancer has left for him, hopefully nothing, but if it's there and he's got to go through it again, I'll go through it, and whatever comes of it comes of it. I'm ready to take all of it on. And, I mean, who wouldn't think that Jim would?
Yeah. You can't doubt him. He's still an incredible Bills fan. I got that sense last night at the gala. Talked about the Bills today. He was here at the rookie minicamp a couple of weeks ago. Had his kind of well-chronicled get-together with Josh Allen. And he talked about Josh Allen today. Jim Kelly talking to the media out at his golf tournament in Batavia today. Gave his early impressions of Bills' first-round draft pick, Josh Allen.
I like what, you know, what I saw, probably more than, you know, the arm, because you have to have a good arm. You have to have all that to be drafted in the first round. But once you're on the football field, it's a different thing. But what I probably liked about Josh, probably more than anything, is how after a play, if he saw something, he talks to the players. He was talking to everybody. And for a young guy to come in here and have this communication with the receivers, with your linemen, talking to them, and after a play, you know, discussing what went on, that's what you want. And not to say that the other two quarterbacks are not going to push them. That's what's about competition. I don't know where this is all going to end up. Josh is a great person. I hope that transcends over to the football field, that he does well. But bottom line is, we just need somebody to be here for 10, 15 years and quit having to worry about the quarterback position like we had the last 20.
He might be the best Bills fan out there, to tell you the truth. He follows it, knows it, comes to practice, which most people don't have access to. But he is totally into the Bills. I had a conversation with him last night about it. Totally into this year's Bills roster and who's playing well, et cetera. He's amazing. He is an amazing
Well, I remember special. When he was here at rookie camp and he came over to say hi to me, I said, "You're here to watch the young kid throw the ball, aren't you?" I was like, "I'm not stupid." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, I want to see this." And He's like, I watched some of the highlights. He goes, they look pretty good on, you know, on the tapes. He goes, but that's the best of the best. He goes, I want to see him play after play here and and see what he's about. And, yeah, I mean, he walks off the field with him and he's talking to him. And I'll guarantee you what he just said there was probably some of what he told Josh, too. Make sure you're communicating with all your teammates. You know, just from what we've heard about Josh Allen through the Bills personnel department and, you know, from draft nicks for whatever you want to take from that, he's a guy that is very personable. I think we had his college coach on when I was filling in with you on the show, and he said he's one of the funniest guys in the room.
Right.
And his teammates have said that. And, you know, humor can go a long way in an NFL locker room. Not to say that's the quintessential way to lead, but when you can pal around with your guys too and not just be all business, I only think it strengthens the relationship. Yeah. And if he can be a relationship builder in that room and perform on the field, those are all good signs.
Jim Kelly speaking at his golf tournament earlier today. They continue to play on at Terry Hills Golf Course out in Batavia. We're going to hear from Steve Tasker a little bit later on in the show. Well, actually coming up in a moment, Steve talked with Bill Polian. We'll hear that interview, talk with former Bills defensive end Phil Hansen from the Wall of Fame. And he talked also today with Eric Wood, now former Bills center Eric Wood, just reached the injury settlement with the Bills last week. Eric Wood sat down with Steve Tasker earlier today at the Kelly Golf Tournament.
Eric, first of all, you look good, man. You look trim. You're trimming down. You went to the Derby. You're loving retirement.
Yeah, starting to enjoy it a little bit. Up here for Jim's event, always love coming out here and support Jim. I've bought my own team the past 7 or 8 years, right. So always bring my buddies up. They get super excited. We did the Derby. I've had a pretty good off season, but I guess it's permanent off season.
Yes,
now.
That's right. Talk to me about it. Your buddies come up. This is an event. I mean, it's a fun event.
It is, and we come up either Saturday or Sunday. We make a weekend out of it. It's a little guys trip, and it's something we look forward to. I bring one of my college teammates is up here, and a couple of my buddies from Louisville, and. Generally, Will Wolford wasn't able to make it, but generally, right. Will brings a group from Louisville, and you know, we have a big contingent up here supporting Jim.
So, give us a little quick synopsis, like what's next for you, just down the road. I mean, I know you're going to have to find yourself, the family and all of that. Tell us a little bit about what your plans are right now.
I'm not sure yet. You know, we'll see. We just got the contract stuff settled this week, so we'll kind of move on from there. And you know, at that point now, I can move forward a little bit. But I'm not sure. I've been spending a lot of time as a full-time dad, and I know I'm not a stay-at-home dad, so I'll be working somewhere, but I'm not sure yet.
Well, the big thing I want to ask you about is your career ended because of an unexpected neck injury. What are the long-term outlook for that, and how do you feel now? Give us a little synopsis about your physical condition, given the way your career had to end.
Yeah, I feel pretty good, honestly. I mean, I've lost some weight, so my joints feel good. With the neck, it's kind of one of those deals where we're going to have to stay on it. I didn't need immediate surgery because the symptoms weren't bothering me on a day-to-day basis when I was playing a little bit, but not when I was just walking around living normal life. So we'll kind of move on from there. It's going to be something that we have to monitor moving forward. But honestly, right now, I feel pretty good.
And now, is it going to be something you have to, like, do rehab and stay on top of, do certain exercise? Like, are you going to be one of those Pilates guys, yoga guys? Or is it a different kind of injury than that?
You know, it's a little different than that. I don't know that yoga would do much more than hopefully help my golf game. But, you know.
It doesn't help. I've tried.
Yeah. Well, then maybe I won't waste my time with it. But, but honestly, it's going to be something that I probably have to monitor. But, you know, it's not something pressing right now where we need operation or anything.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about, you know, your career ended, you know, the way it did. Is it, when you look back on it now, you had a lot of fun. You made a lot of great friends. Did it mean something to you that you played your whole career for one team and made yourself kind of a fixture here in Buffalo?
Yeah, it did. And especially in a town like this that truly appreciates the players. Man, I've made so many memories. It's amazing how many people coming out to a golf tournament that, you know, non-football people in town that I've got to build relationships with. And it was great for me and my family. We owned a house up here, and we really embedded ourselves in this community. And I look forward to staying a part of the community. We're going to keep my foundation going up here. But, yeah, it meant a lot to me to be up here my entire career and hopefully continue a relationship with the Bills.
Any events on the horizon for your foundation up here?
We're going to do our Flights and Bites event again in the fall, so we're looking forward to that. We don't have a date set yet, but we'll push that out through social media. And we're looking forward to that. We'll definitely keep our Christmas program going. That's something that was near and dear to my heart, taking the kids on the shopping sprees and helping out families around Christmas time is something I'm passionate about.
Eric Wood, thanks for being with us. Enjoy the day, man.
Thanks, Steve.
Take care.
Eric Wood with Steve Tasker at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament earlier today. We're going to miss Eric Wood, and I don't mean like buddy-buddy, but those of us who cover the team, follow the team, report on the team in a variety, we're going to miss him, I think, because of his straightforward, kind of unpretentious approach to virtually everything, including non-football things. I mean, I had great conversations with Eric about college basketball over the years. He's a huge Louisville fan. About horse racing over the years, the Derby. He's a big fan of the Derby. Yep. I know he went this year. But especially about football and his knack for keeping things in perspective and putting them in the proper perspective. Tough losses, great wins, ending playoff droughts. Eric Wood was always a go-to guy for kind of a distillation of the right approach to this, and I think that will be missed by us, and I'm sure it'll be missed by his teammates in the locker room.
Well, and it's also hard to tell it like it is while also towing the company line, which is what he was pretty adept at doing, because that made the people in the front office happy, because he wasn't going to say the wrong thing and put anybody in a bad light. But at the same time, he would give the media what they wanted, which was, we're not playing good enough, or we've got to get better at this. I mean, he was very frank about the performance of the team, but he did it in such a way that didn't undermine any of the relationships he had with his teammates, coaches, or the front office. And that is not always an easy line to walk, but he capably did that. And I think it speaks to why, you know, he was a team captain for this team for so many years.
As a player, 9 years in, I wonder how much longer do you think the Bills could have expected he would play.
I would say two more seasons.
Yeah, a couple,
easy.
I was thinking. His neck injury was a surprise, right?
Yeah.
There was no inkling of that during any part of his career, even last year. And so that was a surprise coming up in January when it did. What was it? Mid to late January, right? Somewhere around there, about 3 weeks into January. But I think they probably expected they'd get a couple of more years out of him,
right?
And they probably really wanted him around because of kind of the leadership and perspective issues we just talked about, along with his play.
And, you know, you look at what's on the horizon there at that position, and, you know, obviously they signed Russell Bodine in free agency, and Ryan Groy certainly proved himself capable there after having to fill in for Eric in the 2016 season for the last seven games of the year. So there are options. Be interesting. I think that's going to be one of the more interesting position battles in training camp. It seems as though Bodine is getting the majority of the first team reps, at least through the OTA period.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that changes, you know, come mini camp, training camp, I guess remains to be seen. But, you know, I really wonder if a lot of what the offensive staff is thinking about in terms of the replacement at that position is rooted in scheme, because you've got Bodine, who is not nearly the bulk or the girth that Ryan Groy is. I mean, Ryan Groy is a legit 6'5", 325-pound player, and Bodine is close in height but not in weight and girth. And so you wonder, you know, is this an offense that's going to move faster and get up to the line quicker? Do they need a lighter player as a result up there to kind of get on the ball and get things going instead of a bulkier player to drive people off the line of scrimmage? I wonder if scheme will impact the competition at all. That's the one thing I'm very curious about as we get to training camp.
Yeah, you know, if you force me to pick how it's going to turn out, I would think you're going to have Bodine at center and Groy at guard. I really do. Don't you? Or do you think things are still in play up front? I guess they're still in play.
It could change. I mean, really, these decisions aren't finalized
until
you get to a couple of preseason games, because that's when the real bullets are flying, and I think that's when the coaches really do their final evaluations. I think they have a pretty good handle on what they think they have.
Yeah.
But every coach would tell you, I want to know what I have before I make a decision on a position battle. And I think, you know, to a certain extent too, because I know Russell Bodine was not like this signing that got people in Buffalo all that excited. And there were people, you know, there were fans in Cincinnati that weren't all that thrilled with how he played last year. But I think there were a lot of moving parts last year. You had a left guard who was an undrafted free agent that was playing next to him in Cincinnati and Trey Hopkins. You had the offensive coordinator canned after two games last year in Cincinnati. So there was all of this. There was this state of flux with that offense there until the last month of the season when it seemed like they started to pick things up with Bill Lazor in place there as the play caller. And so I think Bodine and Andy Dalton were really trusted with trying to juggle a lot of balls in the air in the midst of a season. It wasn't like this happened a month before the season started. It was like 2 weeks into the year, and it was like, what are we doing here?
Right. Hey, Brownie, one more thing before we get to the break here. Steve and I have noticed and talked about on the show how every off-site evaluation of the Bills' chances in 2018 and, you know, prospects in 2018 invariably include the fact that Wood's no longer here, Richie Incognito is gone, and then they say, you know, and the Bills traded away starting left tackle Cordy Glenn.
Not really, but
right. I kind of Steve and I wonder how you feel about this. I think people are kind of missing the boat. I am not as alarmed about the state of the offensive line as it appears offsite observers are. And then, you know, when you keep reading it over and over, I start thinking maybe I'm missing something. Maybe they're right. Maybe the Bills have lost that much. I don't know. I don't know if they have. I think they have sufficient depth. They added Bodine and Marshall Newhouse. They drafted a guy who might wind up having something to say about starting a job on the offensive line. I don't view that as much of a weakness as many people offsite do.
Right.
I might
be biased with this opinion just because I've been a beat reporter my whole life, but national reporters tend to, for the most part, base their writings on paper, depth chart paper.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're not here every day.
Right.
They don't see it every day. So they have to base conclusions on what they see on a depth chart and say, well, that guy wasn't here last year. This guy didn't start for them. This guy's got no starts in the league. This guy's never played with that guy. This is a new offense. I don't think they're going to be very good. And if you're not here every day, I don't think you can make that accurate assessment. Let's see what we've got in training camp, maybe a preseason game or two. Then tell me you're worried about the offensive line if they're really struggling. But until that happens, I think everything is premature.
I agree. All right, a break here. We're back with more. Chris Brown, Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com, filling in for Steve Tasker. We're going to hear more from Steve in the next hour. He'll sit down with Bill Polian and with his former teammate Phil Hansen. All of that coming up, so come on back. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. What does Steve call it? One beer lover or something? What did he say? The OBL stand?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the O, but yeah, beer lover.
Steve is out at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament. We're going to hear from him in the third and final hour of the show. He'll talk with Phil Hansen. He'll talk with Bill Polian, the Pro Football Hall of Famer, the former Bills GM. That's coming up in the next hour of the show. Chris Brown filling in for Steve today. Tasker is back for the show tomorrow. Did you catch this on NFL Network, Chris? It's the Good Morning Football show, right? What do they call it? Yeah, Good Morning Football.
Yeah, Good Morning Football.
Yeah, Peter Schrager, who always has an affinity for the Bills, he was asked this morning, which two teams would you like to see in the next four Super Bowls? Peter Schrager had this to say about that question.
There was a moment last Super Bowl after the Eagles beat the Patriots where we're walking out of the building and we're in this wind tunnel and it's all Eagles fans and there's generations of Eagles fans crying. And I'm watching this and it's just, I've been waiting for this since 1960.
Yep.
That's my grandfather. Fan bases who want the Super Bowl and have never had the chance to enjoy it, I want to see them go at it. So I want to see the Buffalo Bills take on the Minnesota Vikings. Both teams are 0-4 all time in Super Bowls.
Somebody has to win.
Someone has to win.
You're so sweet, Peter.
Yeah, the Bills have lost four Super Bowls by a combined score of 139-73. The Vikings, meanwhile, never scored more than 14 points in their four Super Bowl losses. I want to see the 4 years in a row, Bills, Vikings, two diehard fan bases in those cold weather cities, get them one moment of sun, one moment of joy, one moment of light, maybe four in a row. Who knows?
Peter Schrager on NFL Network. You know what?
Four in a row?
Yeah. You know, can I say what offends me a little bit about that?
That is never going to happen again in the NFL.
I don't. There's a condescension there. Like, just give them that. Just give them one thing. Bills don't need that. I don't think Bills fans
charity?
Need that.
You see,
yes.
You said it sounded charitable?
No, but you don't feel sorry for the Bills or their fans. And that's the sense I get from that. Am I being overly sensitive? Don't feel sorry for the Bills. Don't feel sorry for
Murph,
the Bills
fans. It's a fluff segment. Don't read into it too much. They're just fluffing it up there and filling some time during the slow period of the NFL calendar.
You know, like all those poor little Buffalo fans and Minnesota fans. Yeah. Give them a little something.
He's trying to be heartwarming.
Yeah.
Peter Schrager sitting there by the fire, ready to read you a bedtime story and something else.
I did not like that. All right, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour. When we return, we will hear from Bill Polian, Hall of Fame general manager, former general manager of the Buffalo Bills, sits down with Steve Tasker. Want to hear more from you about our topic of the day, who's going to lead the Bills in sacks in 2018? Who do you think? It's our Twitter poll. You can choose from on Twitter. You can choose from Jerry Hughes. Maybe you think it's going to be Shaq Lawson. Maybe you think it's going to be Trent Murphy or somebody else. Give us a call. We'll discuss on the air. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Chris Brown returns. Steve Tasker with Bill Polian when we come back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from One Bills Drive. The Bills wrapped up another day of OTAs today. They're in the third and final week of OTAs. Three more sessions left, and then they hit the mandatory mini camp next week. The Bills with their organized team activity out on the grass field here in Orchard Park with looked like pretty good attendance. Jim Kelly's golf tournament going on in Batavia, Terry Hills Country Club today. Kelly spoke with the media before they teed off today, and Kelly announced that he's going to receive the Jimmy V Award at the 2018 ESPY Awards next month. He said he got a call notifying him he'll be honored with the Jimmy V Award. It's given annually to a deserving member of the sporting world who has overcome great obstacles through perseverance and dedication. Named after Jim Valvano, the former head coach of North Carolina State basketball. Jim Kelly soldiering on through his golf tournament today, just weeks after his latest surgery for oral cancer. He's got several former teammates on hand, along with other celebrities at Terry Hills. We're going to go back there and listen in as Steve Tasker talks this next hour with Bill Polian, Hall of Fame general manager, and Tasker's former teammate, Phil Hansen, the Bills Wall of Famer. Around the NFL, tight end Rob Gronkowski confirms he will attend the Patriots' mandatory minicamp this week after skipping the voluntary workouts, organized team activities this offseason. Gronkowski says he does intend on playing. That's what he told Bill Belichick. Tom Brady, who also has not attended the voluntary workouts, is expected to be at the mandatory minicamp this week, according to team owner Bob Kraft. The Chicago Bears have re-signed tight end Zach Miller to a one-year deal despite a rough knee injury suffered last season. A one-year deal for the veteran minimum, they say. He's 33 years old. Not likely he would play in 2018. Johnny Manziel, former Heisman Trophy winner, on the field for the Hamilton Tiger Cats last Friday night in a preseason game, completed 9 of 11 passes for 80 yards against Toronto. Toronto beat the Tiger Cats 36-18. Stanley Cup Finals tonight. It is Game 4 with Vegas at Washington, 8 o'clock faceoff. Steph Curry led Golden State with a record 9 three-pointers last night in the NBA Finals. The Warriors beat the Cavs 122-103. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy with Chris Brown as Steve Tasker is tending to business out at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament. And by business, I mean, as Steve said, a little bit of golf, but mostly eating and drinking. It sounds like not a bad day.
It'll work for most people.
The one thing Steve said, and this I noticed it again last night, there is a regular crew almost, not exactly the same people year after year at the Kelly Golf Tournament and at the gala last night, but it is a tradition for most people, and the guys who have been there for years keep going back every year. And I know Jim, and he said it last night, he verbalized it last night, he feels indebted to that crew of people who are so loyal to him that they keep coming back year after year. It's pretty impressive.
Right, and you know, you heard Eric Wood say it.
Yep.
I mean, here's a guy that never played with Jim Kelly. Obviously, they played for the same franchise, got to know Jim, and would go to his tournament like when he was still playing. But now that, you know, he's retired due to the neck injury that ended his career, him and his buddies make a weekend out of this. They come up on Saturday, they go to the gala Sunday, and then they play golf on Monday. And, I mean, it's a party out there, so they don't mind it. And I know a lot of fans have asked me over the years, well, why do they go all the way out to Batavia to Terry Hills? It's a 27-hole course, yep. And so that makes the scramble format so much easier to organize with all the guys they have out there. So, you know, it's a situation where with 54 players, upwards of 54 players, very often more than that, you have 27 holes to work with instead of 18. It makes it a whole lot easier.
Yeah, it works out there. It definitely works for Kelly and his former teammates and his friends who show up for the golf tournament. It's a great setup for it. You know what else? And I got this sense last night at the gala as I was co-MC at the gala. I guess it was the MC. Might have been the only MC. But he's got a dedicated group of volunteers who essentially come every year, many of them doing the same tasks, many of them menial tasks, you know, selling some of them selling raffle tickets, some of them just, you know, assisting people on and off stage. The volunteers for this tournament, and there's got to be hundreds of them, are pretty amazing, and I know Jim feels a great debt to them. It was a great night last night. I'm sure they're having a great time out there. Chris Berman is in town for the Kelly Golf Tournament. I spoke with him briefly last night. Chris was on the show with us last week, and he's sticking around. He is in town tomorrow to be the featured speaker. We talked about this last week, the Buffalo Hall of Fame Experience fundraiser. Chris will be the featured speaker tomorrow. I just saw this in the paper over the weekend. The ticket's $75, still available if you go to buffaloexperience.org. Chris will be there, the featured speaker. What they're trying to do is put together three Buffalo Halls of Fame, the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, the Buffalo Music Hall of Fame, and the Buffalo Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame, bringing one Hall of Fame to Buffalo to feature those three areas, featuring history from each. Chris will be the featured speaker tomorrow. It's at the Adams Mark Hotel, 12 noon tomorrow. And if you need more information, go to their website, buffaloexperience.org. I know Chris is pretty excited about that. Speaking of Hall of Famers, former Bills general manager Bill Polian, he is, boy, to my recollection, I don't think he's missed many of these Kelly golf tournaments, Chris.
Nope.
He's always here. And he's here again, and our man Steve Tasker, co-host of the show at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament, had a chance to sit down with Bill's former Bills GM, Bill Polian, to talk about a variety of football issues.
We're here to another beautiful day at Terry Hills. It's the hottest May on record, and then we get out here and it's cold and rainy. It must be because you're in town, Bill.
Yeah, I bring it with me.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
No question about it.
How you feeling? You look great.
Well, thank you. I'm feeling good.
You doing the golf circuit this time of year?
Well, a little bit. I had a little bit of a hip problem, so this is my maiden voyage today on the golf
circuit. So to get out of these golf tournaments, I have to come up with a hip issue, and then I can
correct.
Get out of it.
And you can get out of
some physical ailment to get me off the course.
Yeah, I get in the doctor's note. You know.
Right. So you tell him I can't play in yours, and then you go play in your own course and just with all your buddies.
No, that's
right.
That's not good.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
you don't
not
do
good.
That. How you feeling, huh?
I'm good.
It's great
I'm
to
good,
see you again.
You. Yeah.
You're involved now with. I got to ask you about the Alliance League. You're gonna try and get another league up in an off season capacity. It's called the Alliance League. What is like a 10 team league?
No, it's eight teams.
Eight teams, 10 games.
10 games. And then we'll have two playoffs. The season's going to end, going to begin the week after the Super Bowl, February 9th, and it will end on Draft Sunday. So we'll have kids who play in our league, hopefully who develop well enough to get shots in the National Football League, who'll be able to go right from our league into OTAs, which is very different than what happened in Europe. As you remember, you were playing at the time.
Right.
People came from the Europe League. It was hard to get them in. They just barely made it to training camp. So that's one thing we've done. The other is that we're really focusing on trying to get players ready to play in the National Football League. So
what does that mean? What are some of the things you're specifically doing?
We're going to have really experienced offensive line coaches, experienced quarterback coaches, experienced offensive coordinators. We're going to play NFL-style defense, NFL-style offense, so that guys are used to being in positions where they have to execute some of the skills that they're going to find in the NFL. Now, it's not going to be as refined, obviously, because these are players who have been throughout their careers marginal NFL players.
Right.
But there's a need for this. We got to get guys ready to play in the National Football League to be backups, and then hopefully the next Kurt Warner and someone like that will come out of this league.
What kind of players are eligible for this? Is there any restrictions at all?
No restrictions at all, except that you have to be eligible for professional football. You have to be eligible for the NFL. So
you're not going to get like 18-year-old kids
no,
or something?
No, absolutely not. No, they have to be under the same eligibility factors as the NFL.
So could you possibly get maybe some kids who are coming out for the draft this year?
It's conceivable, but I doubt it.
Right.
Because we would, number one, we'd want our players to be in a position to stay the whole season. And it's unlikely that draft-eligible guys would do that.
They'd stay in school.
They'd probably stay in school. And secondly, I don't know that it's necessarily beneficial for anybody to do that. I think they're better off to go through the draft process.
All right, we're here with Bill Polian, Hall of Fame general manager of the NFL, and we're talking about the Alliance Football League. Talk to me about some of the head coaches you've got, because I've heard about some of them. It's a pretty impressive list.
Well, we're still rolling them out. We've got Mike Martz, of course, a Super Bowl winner in San Diego. Dennis Erickson, national championship winner at Miami and a successful head coach in the NFL in Salt Lake City. Rick Neuheisel in Phoenix. Brad Childress, former coach of the Vikings in Atlanta. And Mike Singletary, Hall of Fame linebacker and former head coach of the 49ers in Memphis. And we'll be rolling out a few more as the next month or so goes by.
Not only that, I know that our guy Pete Metzlars has been contacted about becoming one of the guys on the staff. Because that's, I mean, there's a full coaching staff.
And, oh, yeah.
I mean,
what 10 assistant coaches.
Now, are they going to have team owners? Is it
going to
be
a smaller
It's
version? A single entity. Corporation. There's quite a few investors. We've got darn near $900 million in financing, which you have to have in order to make it go. Anything
just a little
like
seed money, $900 million. Well, just to get us, just get your feet wet.
It's expensive to buy helmets and shoulder pads and what have you. And Charlie Ebersole, who's the successful documentary producer, he's done many 30 for 30s. And is the son of Dick Ebersole, former head of NBC Sports, is my co-founder, and we work together. And now there are lots of other people involved, but Charlie had the original idea, and then I fleshed it out, and we've been going ever since.
Now, tell me a little bit more, if you can. You mentioned a couple of them when you're listing coaches, but give me a list of the cities.
Well, we're in San Diego, we're in Salt Lake City, Phoenix. In the East, Memphis, Orlando, where Steve Spurrier will be coaching. That's an obvious natural. And we're looking for a quarterback there that has a big name. We'll see whether or not we can get him.
Like who? Who are you talking about?
Well, some guy playing baseball now.
Oh, you're talking about Tim Tebow.
I can't mention any names.
Oh, all right.
But that's a consideration. And then we've got two more that we're going to be rolling out here in the next couple of weeks.
So talk a little bit about, you know, the structure of it. When you're going to have a training camp all the way through the winter, that kind of thing. And plus, it's going to be kind of an early spring league starting in February.
Very early.
It's
that's
be winter
right.
Almost.
Yeah.
That's why you have to kind of keep these in the southern.
That's
part
exactly
of the
right. And unless we're in a dome stadium, it doesn't make sense to be in the north. The we will have a mini camp very likely in the first week or so in December, and then everybody will come together. We hope at one site. In a obvious warm weather place for training camp, and that'll go for a month, basically from January 1st to February 1st, and then the teams will move to their respective communities, and away we'll go.
You're going to have all these guys at one training camp.
We're hoping that's
teams.
The case.
We're
wow, hoping
that would
that's
be
the
awesome.
Case. Yeah, it's a big undertaking. The reason we want to do it is because we want to make sure that everybody's on the same page going forward with rules and things like that. And it's easier to do it under one roof. We don't know if we can do that yet. We're in the process of fleshing that out.
There can only be, for a camp that size, there can only be a handful of sites that can even accommodate. Any idea where that is?
We're looking at Florida, in Florida, and there are two that we're looking at now, Arizona, one in Alabama. They have various stages of infrastructure.
Sure.
That's the key thing.
Right.
And then if we have to, we can go 4-4. We can go 4 in Florida, 4 in Arizona.
Right. And you keep them west and east in the divisions
exactly.
And that kind of thing.
Yeah. Mike Pereira, by the way, is going to head up our officiating. So we've got a very strong NFL attachment. We're an adjunct to the NFL. We're certainly not affiliated with them in any way. But we got lots of people who have lots of NFL experience.
Yeah, the NFL has got to be pulling hard for you because it's a chance for them to see more players and get better on and just scout guys.
That's generally been the feedback that we've gotten from NFL people. It's a good thing. We know the people that are involved. We wish you well, but obviously they can't get involved for legal reasons. But most people I've talked to in the NFL have been generally favorable toward it.
Yeah, and the reason, I guess we should, for people listening, the reason the NFL can't get involved is because it would be a kind of a monopoly.
Antitrust. Yeah, federal problem. Antitrust.
Because
that's right.
Because if the NFL is the only place that you can play football, they got a little problem.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So how many guys, is it going to exactly mirror the NFL, the roster sizes?
No, it'll be a little bit different. We'll have 50-man rosters. We'll go to camp with between 75 and 80. We haven't firmed that up yet. We're going to finish all of that up by about July 1st. We'll have 40 between 43 and 45 active on game day. We've got to go. That needs to still be fleshed out. We're going to have some interesting rule situations.
I was going to ask about that next.
First of all, and this is going to sound radical, but it's not going to look like that on television. By the way, we have a television partner, CBS.
Oh, very nice.
And your network, and if you're not doing anything,
hey, I didn't know that.
We welcome you as the analyst.
I'm going to get busier. I didn't need that.
You're
killing me. You're still killing me.
I know.
After all these years.
But, you know, I can always rely on you. Yeah, that's what I know.
Right. So they got a TV deal. And what are the rule changes are going to be?
So we're going to have a 2.5-hour game.
Oh, okay.
Now, that's because there are not going to be a lot of television commercials. They'll be featured in another way. There's going to be very, very dynamic and brand-new graphics and presentation and an app on which you can watch the game and which you can participate in in-game fantasy. So all of that stuff is on the technical side. I'm obviously not qualified nor involved in it.
Right.
Anybody that knows me knows that.
I can dial my smartphone.
Me too. As Marv used to say, I not only don't know how to use a screwdriver, I don't know who to call to find out. So the technical people are doing that, but it's going to be exciting. And then we're going to have very likely a 30-second clock. Everything's going to be up tempo and go. So it'll not be look very much like we did in the early 90s.
So you do have a close tie with the NFL, and then I mean not a tie, but certainly a relationship and understanding.
Yeah.
And also with CBS, the broadcast industry. So did CBS, when they jumped on board, did they offer some suggestions about, hey, let's try, you know, when you start talking about the 2.5-hour, let's try this because we've got some things we want to try in the broadcasting because I know they do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've done some pretty exciting things with the rules, too. We're not fooling around with the kickoff. Now, I know you've been involved, but we're
totally taking it out.
Yeah, we're going to start with the ball on the 25-yard line. And we've solved the onside kick situation by saying, if you want the onside kick, in lieu of that, it's fourth down. We're deciding whether it's fourth and 10 or fourth and 12. That's still to be decided
it's
with
all
the coaches.
You can go back and look at all the
numbers.
That's
exactly right.
Okay, do we want to – it was fourth
and – fourth and 14
fourth was – fourth and 14 or fourth and 15 was almost exactly the same conversion rate as an onside kick.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we have to decide yet whether we – and all this will be done by the end of July – whether we want to modify it, because our skill level is going to be a little bit lower. We're not going to have Tom Brady and Peyton Manning playing quarterback. So maybe fourth and 12 is more
doable,
reasonable and doable. So that will solve that problem. We have no extra points. Everything's a two-point conversion.
Oh, okay.
Because I just think
just
keep playing football. That's exactly right. And so those two things those three things, the 30-second clock, the no kickoff, the no onside kick, and the two-point conversion are completely new. Otherwise, we'll look exactly like the NFL, the exception, I think, being the helmet rule, because I think what we will do is say we're going to have a point of emphasis on butt, ram, and spear. I think the result will be the same, but With younger officials, we don't want to put that onus on them right away. And frankly, we want to see how it works in the NFL.
Bill Polian, it's great seeing you. Thanks for coming back to Terry Hills. And I always get a chance to see you at Jim's tournament. We all kind of parachute in for the weekend. It's
This is homecoming for us.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks for being here. Great to see you, buddy.
Steve Tasker with Bill Polian, the Pro Football Hall of Famer, the Bills Wall of Famer, former Bills general manager, and now the co-founder and head of football for the Alliance of American Football. A lengthy discussion with Steve about that. John Murphy and Chris Brown in our One Buffalo studio. Chris, look, I am all in on the Alliance of American Football. I talked to Bill about it last night. Obviously, he just talked to Steve about it. I love the concept. I love the idea. I love the two things. I love the fact that there's going to be a developmental league. What do you say, 10 games, right, that will end the Sunday of NFL draft weekend, a spring league. a developmental league to find any other players who might still have a role to play in the NFL. Love that. That's been something sorely lacking for a long time in pro football. Number two, I love the fact that the NFL, even though it's not officially affiliated with the Alliance of American Football, will have a chance to test out some of these different rules they want to have. You know, as Bill said, the 30-second clock as opposed to a 40-second clock, eliminating kickoffs. You know what I mean? There's a lab now to test out some of these things with this new league that starts next spring. I love that.
Not to mention more effectively scout talent because they're going to be playing the NFL game, as Steve told us at the top of the show when we had him on live from the golf course, because I think you hear from college scouting departments for NFL teams, and the prevailing concern that they have is the college game continues to move further and further away from the NFL game. You're drafting offensive tackles who have never been in a three-point stance. You're drafting quarterbacks who have never been under center, never called a play in the huddle. You're dealing with wide receivers who have never made a sight adjustment in their life or have been hot based on, you know, what the blitz package is coming at them pre-snap. These are all players who have to be schooled on these things at a time in the NFL where, as dictated by the CBA, there is less practice time than ever. So the onus is on the coaches to school these players up, and you're really relying on a player's football acumen to really reach their fullest potential because a lot of cases they have to do it on their own and get it on their own because the one-on-one time on the practice field just doesn't exist anymore. So with all of those concerns, the scouting becomes more difficult to make accurate projections because you're not seeing them do the same things they're going to need to do at the NFL level. This is a league that could reduce that risk for scouting departments with players who could be making that bridge to the NFL by playing in this league, doing the kinds of things that NFL coaches and front offices want out of their players. If they see them executing in the fashion they'll need to at the pro level, they're more apt to get an opportunity at the pro level because it's a safer projection than a college junior that's never done it before. And what do coaches like to do more than anything? Play it safe.
Yeah.
And I would expect them to communicate that kind of a message to their personnel departments.
They've got the right people in charge, and I include Bill Polian in that. Charlie Ebersol, co-founder and CEO, you know, obviously a big television experience guy. Troy Polamalu, former Steelers safety, is head of player relations. Hines Ward, player relations executive. Jared Allen, player relations executive and an investor. Justin Tuckin is involved as a member of the Player Engagements Board of Advisors. And Bill went through the list of coaches. Brad Childress going to coach the Atlanta team. Mike Singletary scheduled to coach the team in Memphis. Steve Spurrier in Orlando. Rick Neuheisel. We just had him on the show at the Super Bowl, right, didn't we? Yeah.
You had him on at the Combine.
Or at the Combine, that's right, Combine. He's going to coach in Sun Devil Stadium in Phoenix. Dennis Erickson will coach in Salt Lake. And Mike March will coach in San Diego. Looks like they have a coaching opening in Alabama. Eight teams, eight cities, one owner for the entire league. I just think it's perfect. I can't wait till it starts.
Is that three coaches over the age of 70?
Probably, Craig Erickson, right?
Craig Erickson is definitely over 70. Spurrier is definitely over 70.
Erickson might be close, right?
He's got to be there.
Mike March?
March has got to be pushing 70. We got some... No offense, but we got some old-timers.
That's all right.
Rolling out there.
And you know, and let's face it, Bill Polian is not a spring chicken either. He is the guy.
Right.
I said, what's your role? I talked to him last night. He said, I'm basically the architect of the football operation, which is a pretty good role to have. He is officially
six-time executive of the year. Yeah, he's a pretty good guy to get.
Head of football is his title, co-founder and head of football. Look, this is not going to challenge the NFL, but it's a great spring league. It's a great way to develop players.
Feeder system.
Yeah, and work out some of these rules changes that we talk about, that we debate all the time. You know, what can you play without kickoffs? Can you institute that sort of onside kick alternative where you give them fourth and 12 maybe?
Or fourth and 10. They're trying to figure that out. What's the better down and distance?
Let's work that out in an NFL-type setting. I love the idea, and I'm glad that Bill's involved, and I'm glad that Steve got a chance to talk in depth with Bill Polian about the Alliance of American Football coming up next March 20th. It's going to start right after the Super Bowl, Bill said.
Super
Bowl of 2019. Yeah, February of 2019, their inaugural season. And it's going to be on TV. Bill told me last night the first game they anticipate will be on the big CBS, regular CBS, and many of the rest of the games on CBS Sports Network, at least one game per week. It's going to be fun. Look forward to that. Chris Brown is with us. Steve Tasker is out at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament. You're welcome to join us as well. Who's going to lead the Bills in sacks? We'll take your phone calls and talk about that. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter at OneBillsLive. Plus, Steve, back with Phil Hansen when we return. Come on back for one, at least one more segment. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Back, One Bills Five from One Bills Drive, coming here from Orchard Park. It's a cloudy, cool day. You heard Steve Tasker. We're going to go back to Steve in a moment or two. He sat down with Phil Hansen at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament. But Steve basically leading off virtually every one of his interviews today with a complaint about the weather. Kind of reminiscent of his predecessor on the show.
Donald Jones dig. Ouch.
No, I love Donald, but he had issues with the weather. And we all do, right? You live here, you don't love it. Today's one of those days when you're like, what? Come on. As Steve has pointed out, the month of May was one of the record-breaking.
It was the warmest weeks. One on record here.
And here we are in June. Now it's June 4th.
Memorial Day weekend was awesome.
Yeah, and we got this weather, and it's always for the Kelly Tournament. I don't know what that is. Always for the Jim Kelly Tournament. Talked a lot today about Bills, sacks. We got a few minutes left to take your phone calls on that. Who do you think is going to lead the team in sacks this coming season? If you have an opinion, you want to ring us up, give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. From the tweet sheet, who will lead the Bills in sacks this year? Rebecca Sobchak says, I think Trent Murphy is going to lead in sacks. Shaq and Jerry will be better this year. Is that a lot to ask Trent Murphy, given his background, given his injury rehab?
Yeah, I mean, he's still non-contact out there and very limited, you know, coming off his knee injury. And I really don't know what to expect from him. I think this might be a get-well year where maybe he's got 6 to 8 sacks, depending on the level of his playing time. I think the other thing is this guy is a strong, hold-the-edge type end. He's kind of in the mold of a Phil Hansen.
Yeah.
And so that's not to say he can't rush the quarterback. He most definitely can. But his length is seen as an asset in the run game and the run front. And holding the edge was an issue last year at times. And this guy is very good at that. And so I think in his return from missing a full season of play is be an edge defender for us against the run. And let's get you back into pass rushing form as we go here. Because there is a lot of torque that you are putting on your knee, especially coming off the left edge. It's his left knee. All the torque is on that knee when you're driving up the field, leaning on a 300-pound man who's leaning on you, you know, whether you're, you know, trying to get a rip move, a club move, whatever it is. There's a lot of push and pull and torque that's going on that joint. And so, you know, a lot of times the bigger players tend to take longer to recover from those major injuries like an ACL and things like that. So it wouldn't surprise me if – and I'm not doubting Trent Murphy. I don't have a reason to. I don't know him well enough as a player to make that assessment. But history tells me in this league that the bigger players take longer to recover, and I anticipate him being kind of on this steady climb as the year goes on. Does that translate into 10 sacks? Boy, I don't know. I don't know.
Trent Murphy had 9 sacks the last year he played two seasons ago in 2016. Before that, 3.5 in 2015 and 2.5 in 2014. So we did have a good year sack production-wise a couple of years ago, but that knee injury is significant. And as Chris said and as Leslie Frazier told us last week, he is not involved in contact-type work or teamwork at all right now. Brian Rossignol tweets in an answer to our question, who will lead the team in sacks this year? He says, in my opinion, the pass rush in general will notably improve. The rush would improve with less rotational turnover, setup moves. They will all benefit, front seven in the secondary to the offense, play time, snaps. Jerry Hughes won't play second fiddle to anyone and have a career season. Well, that would be great if he would have a career season. Rush would improve with less rotational turnover. Does he mean fewer people getting in the lineup?
Yeah.
I guess. Will it? But I don't know that it will.
Yeah.
I don't know if I
buy
that.
I mean, what is Jerry now, 30? I think you might want to rotate him. Keep
yeah,
him
you
fresh.
Got to rotate, and Kyle's going to
keep him
be
fresh throughout the year.
You got Harrison Phillips. You got others are going to have to play. Adolphus Washington and others. I get it, I guess, that if you're in there every down, you can set up a move and use it, you know, the next play. But I think the bigger benefit is to have fresh bodies in there, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, fresh Rex legs. Ryan did not rotate when he was here coaching the defense, did not rotate players on that defensive front. He went with his starters for most of the game, and the results were not better to what they were when Mike Pettine and Jim Schwartz coached that defensive front and rolled the lines pretty frequently. So I'm a proponent of rotational. Just keep your guys fresher through the course of the game. So in the fourth quarter, when you absolutely need a play from one of your frontline guys, you can get them on the field and, you know, they don't have an extra 20 snaps on their legs and, you know, they can get home when they need to get home at a critical juncture of the football game.
Another tweet on this will lead the team in sacks. I think people are kind of I like the tweets we're getting. People are giving this some thought. Vince Guarino tweets in, tricky question. Shaq has the most to gain by busting out an all-pro type year. He's been performing well below his draft status so far. Jerry Hughes had a down year. Could he move around a little to wreak more havoc? The D-line additions may dictate who lead this defense. Well, we asked the question because I do believe that it is it's a legitimate question, Chris. It'd be like I said, I don't really care who it winds up being. I just want somebody to get double digits or close to double digits.
Yeah, I said my money's on Jerry. I think all of the D-line additions help him the most because they're going to demand more attention, and that should free up Jerry to be more successful, more productive. The guys in the middle of the front are going to prevent quarterbacks from stepping up in the pocket. That should allow him to get around the corner more effectively and take the quarterback down, which was not the case last year. And, you know, if Shaq proves to be effective with this new mindset and this new body that he's kind of sculpted himself into, and he demands attention, advantage Jerry again. So you can't double everybody.
Right.
So if those guys, if Shaq pans out and has that breakout season and the guys in the middle of the front, you know, can keep the quarterback from stepping up in the pocket, I like the season that Jerry Hughes could have.
Yep. We'll see. Give us your call. I'd like to hear your voice on the air. Who's going to lead the Bills in sacks in 2018? 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. In the 1990s, Phil Hansen finished with 61.5 career sacks for the Buffalo Bills. He was not a premier pass rusher, but he was solid, benefiting by some of the talent he played with up front. Phil Hansen's in town again this year for the Jim Kelly Celebrity Golf Tournament. He sat down a couple of moments ago with our man Steve Tasker out at Terry Hills Country Club in Batavia.
So, Phil, you turned to the dark side, became a broadcaster. You're the color analyst on the radio broadcast of the North Dakota State Bisons football team, and you're one of the few people who saw every game Carson Wentz played at quarterback in the NFL. Did it surprise you, the success he had this last year, second year in the league?
You know, Carson Wentz was a guy from Bismarck, North Dakota, that picked up things really fast. But you can say that about a lot of guys. Yes, as time went on, I said by the end, I said maybe he'll be a first-rounder. But for him to be second in the draft was a couple years ago now. Yeah, that was something quite amazing.
Now, did you see him play at all in the NFL with Philly this year before suffered the injury?
No, never saw him play in the NFL, but we did.
Not in person. I'm talking about TV and everything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
as expected. I mean, the guy, he's a student of the game. I know that's an overused term, but he does. Let me give an example of his first game was out in Montana when he took over the starting reins. He came up to the line. He got a 25-second count on him. Every time when he came up to the line after that, he always looked at the play clock before. He was a quick learn. He put a guy in motion before he even got to the line of scrimmage because he knew his time was running out. I mean, and you never had to tell him again. You tell him once, he's got it figured out. Now, the NFL is a whole nother animal. I mean, there's a lot more to think about. But I was really shocked at how well he did. But he picks up things fast, and I think it paid dividends for them. And he's tough. He's a good guy, good Christian guy. I mean, you will not be disappointed in Carson Wentz's performance or how he lives his life.
Talk to me a little bit about you. I mean, you see all the North Dakota State games, and talk to me about that level of football, because now more and more they're getting scouts out and they're getting deeper into the college game about where they find guys. And Carson Wentz is a great example. Josh Allen here in Buffalo, another example, going out to Wyoming. Give us a percentage of the athletic guys who, you know, how many guys are there at that level on the team
Forget mental and all the other stuff, but athletically, you know, you've got a pretty good percentage of guys that could play at the next level.
Just to give you an idea, North Dakota State is pretty much the top of FCS. So you'll never see North Dakota State in a bowl game, FBS. You'll see them in FCS championships. They've won six of the last seven FCS championships.
They're a powerhouse down there.
Yes, they're very good. Joe Haig from Indianapolis, offensive line, pretty versatile. They can move him around. He's one guy that's in the NFL. You know Carson Wentz. There's about 8-10 guys floating around the NFL. So that's about what they produce over the years.
Are you talking about 8-10 guys around the NFL from North Dakota State?
Yes.
Right.
Yep,
so
floating around. Either
but that's
free
a powerhouse. And now other teams in that level will have probably just a few less guys than that, but they're everywhere, correct?
Right. They are everywhere. And you see them. They're the guys that come out from the small colleges. And everybody always says, oh, you're a small college guy. How do you expect to compete? Just like they did when I came out.
Right.
You know, you still got guys that can play. And guys are late bloomers for different reasons. They go to different colleges, but they can still play. And, you know, that's a scout's job to figure out the guys that they think can transition to the NFL. Now, you're never going to get, you know, 200 guys coming out from FCS level that can contribute at an NFL level, like the FBS, the Alabamas, the big schools. You know, there is some production. And if you can find a gym like a Carson Wentz, you've got a real winner there for a long time.
When we were neck deep in the draft this year because the Bills had two first-round picks. They jumped up and got Josh Allen, and then they also they took Tremaine Edmonds, two phenomenal athletes. How important do you think for the next lap around, and you've seen this a bunch, how important is it when you start to evaluate these young players coming out of FCS instead of FBS? Do they have to dominate that league to be successful, or do they – are good, solid players good enough? You know what I'm saying? Because we always say, well, he didn't dominate at the lower level, and so we're not going to take him or think that he can play at the next level any good.
And that's why the scouting has never been an exact science. It's some we think, we feel, and then there are some measurable things you can do. But, you know, Josh Allen played for the coach there, Craig Bohl. He was the coach at North Dakota State who took them to three of the national championships before they went there. So, I don't know the kid personally. I don't, but I was sure excited to see him come here to Buffalo and see what he can do.
So you came back to Jim's tournament again, like you always do. How many times have you – do you have any idea? How many times have you been here? It's the 32nd year of it. I've been to 30 of them.
I don't know if I've been to 30 of them, but – I was going through some stuff in my house up by my pool table, and I pulled out a 19th. We won the tournament the 19th year, so I know I've been here at least that
13,
long.
Yeah. What year was that? What is that?
I don't know.
I'm not going to do public math again. I turned
50 this
out.
Year, so
right.
I want to start not thinking about that kind of stuff.
I know
stuff.
Exactly what you mean, but you talk to me about saying hello to Jim, seeing him, what it means. And you know the battle he's going through, and to have him out, and he's out here just – tooling around, and he was at the event last night. It's turning into an even more amazing story with each passing month.
You know what? The story I remember about Jim as a rookie, and this just follows through to what you see today, and you might have told me this story, but I've got part of it too. I remember in 91, I was a rookie. Jim threw an interception, and they were the big defensive line tipped the ball and was running it back. And first of all, the big offensive lineman tried to tackle him. They couldn't get him down. Then all the wide receivers jumped on top of him. They couldn't get him down. The last guy to get off that pile as I was running on the field was Jim Kelly. His helmet was on sideways, looking out his ear hole. But I remember thinking to myself, going out on the field, you know what? That's the kind of guy I want to play with. There's a competitor to the bitter end, no matter what. I'm not that I'm the star on offense and I run off the field. If the guy needs to be tackled, I'm going to do it. And I remember that story, and I remember that play, and that's just the tenacity of that guy, and you just can't help but wish him the best and keep him in your prayers all the time.
I remember that story as well. I relate it to people all the time about how he went down and tackled a guy after he threw an interception, and I always used to hang it over Marino's head. You'd never see Marino making a tackle after even if it was all his fault. He's walking off the field the other direction. He disgusted.
That's somebody else's job.
Right?
That's not mine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's it. Phil, thanks for being here. Great to see you again, and we'll see you again next year for sure. It's good to have you back.
You bet. Go Bills.
Phil Hansen, longtime defensive end for the Super Bowl Bills of the 90s with Steve Tasker. Our thanks to Steve, who's done an outstanding job out at the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament today. He talked to Phil Hansen, Bill Polian, Eric Wood, Bruce Smith. He talked to us.
Yeoman's work out there.
He's been killing it. And his group, I'm told, his fivesome is currently – 16 under par. No, I just made that up. I don't know what that
is. You should have said that like a golf announcer.
Currently 16 under par as they make the turn.
There's his approach shot. Hey, did you see this? It was late Friday, Chris, and it happened in Cleveland. We got a chance to look at it a little bit. Hugh Jackson, the Browns coach,
yes,
with a record of 31 losses. He promised that if the Browns did not do better than they did in
2016, he would jump in Lake Erie.
Yeah, that was it. He raised $30,000.
So they went 0-16
for charity, survivors for human trafficking.
Yeah,
they did not do better than the year before. They went 0-16. He's 1-31, and so Hugh Jackson last Friday jumped in Lake Erie in Cleveland. Now it was cold. It wasn't winter like cold, but it was cold. He called it the cleanse. Cleveland cleanse.
They had T-shirts and everything.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going in Lake Erie to cleanse necessarily here. I don't know if that's the lake you want to pick. But, I mean, it's certainly better than it was in the 70s when, they had rivers down there. They were lighting on fire in Cleveland due to chemical waste and whatnot. But, I'm glad he turned it into a good cause.
Yeah.
The human traffic.
Wouldn't it have been more impactful if he had done it in February or March or something?
Though? That's not happening, Murph.
Why not? People do it, those polar bear people.
Yeah, they're a little nutty. I bet he's darn happy that Memorial Day weekend was as hot as it was up here.
Yeah.
In the Great Lakes region, because the temperature of the lake went up 5 degrees in 3 days over Memorial Day weekend. Usually it's in the mid-50s this time of year. I think it's up around 60 right now. So at least you can get in and get out, and it's tolerable. Because that's like Lake Tahoe temperature. Lake Tahoe is a cold lake. For two reasons. Number one, it's at 6,200 feet of elevation. Number two, it's 1,600 feet deep. And number three, there's actually three reasons. I forgot the third one. All the water's coming right out of the snow caps on the top of the mountains there. Because I swam in that lake in the middle of July.
It was cold?
Holy cow.
Really?
Like, I went out there. It was like one of our last family vacations with my parents. My sister and I are out there, and my dad had been out there once before. And he's like, oh, he goes, you want to swim in the lake? I was like, yeah. Let's do it. It's like one of the purest lakes in the country.
Young brownie. Love the young brownie.
He's like, okay, you won't be in there long. I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, it's freezing. I go, it's going to be July. How cold could the lake be? He goes, do you know how deep that lake is? This is when Dad Brown lecture comes in. Do you know how deep that lake is? Do you know where that water comes from? Do you see those mountain peaks up there? That's where the water comes from. So now I've got to own up to it. I got to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm in there, and he's like, how you doing out there? And I was like, I'm all right. I'm like, holy crap, I'm going to have to tread water and keep moving here to stay warm enough to stay in here for 10 minutes. I got to stay at least 10 minutes. It was cold.
And didn't you also go out fishing with your uncle Freddie Corleone on Lake Tahoe?
I did not, but I did pass the mansion where they shot Godfather 2. It was on a little tour that I did. That was cool.
We got a break. We're back with more. Chris Brown is with us. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. What We Learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Much of our show came courtesy of Steve Tasker, who's out playing in the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament and did some interviews with us. And while he was out there, they picked up Jim Kelly's news conference. Kelly announced that this year at the ESPYs, next month, he's going to receive the Jimmy V Award from ESPN. Kelly talked about that when he talked to the media today.
People are saying, that's awesome. I go, yeah, it's awesome. The only thing bad about it is you had to go through a lot in order to get that award. But I just know in my heart that the good Lord has put me in a situation to help not only the people out there who are suffering from cancer, but little kids, too, that are going through tough times. And to never give up, keep fighting because you never know.
Jim Kelly talking to the media at his golf tournament today. Also today, we had Julian Stanford in studio with us, a Bills linebacker who's bounced around a little bit around the National Football League, five teams over the last 7 years. We asked him what he likes about the culture on this Buffalo Bills team.
From day one, I felt like the whole organization was welcoming with open arms. I felt the fan base was welcoming with open arms. Once I got into the building, met the players, got in the locker room, I feel like the locker room is a very close-knit family type setting. They care a lot about you as a person as well as a player, and I think those are big things, and it kind of makes you want to play for each other and do more for each other because it's like a family.
Julian Stanford talking about what he likes about here in Buffalo. We have had, as we said, a great day with Steve out at the Kelly Golf Tournament, Chris Brown in studio. Chris, the other day, I think it was last Friday, we were 100 days exactly away from the Bills opener at Baltimore, September 9th. And a question we talk about on the show, I want to ask you, because we don't get a chance to talk to you all the time, what should be job one for the Bills? What do they have to get done in these next now 96 days, 97 days?
Got to get the offense ironed out, and you got to figure out who your quarterback is. I think that's the top of the list right now. I mean, that's 1 and 1A. And I think the offense only has to come first because they got to know what they're doing before you can decide who you're doing it with. And then after that, you just run down the list of what you feel is pressing, figuring out the kickoff and how you're going to handle that strategically. I think that's an underrated thing that every team's dealing with this offseason. There's a couple others too, but those are probably the top three right now.
Good one. Chris, thanks. Hope to get you in here. We will get you in here and not over the next couple of weeks. Thank you. Production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, and James Robel, our producer, Jay Harris. We're back on the air. Steve is back here tomorrow at 12 noon. So join us then. One Bills Live presented by Kalida Health. We'll be live here at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.